Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome to NLA's conference call on pretty much questions and comments on law. Anybody got any cases particular, maybe we could talk a little bit about it. But today's Thursday, August 7th, 2014. All right, we're going to try to keep all of the mics open. It's been going pretty good over the past couple of times we've done this. And so let me just click. So everybody's been muted now. You can unmute yourself with a *6. And when you're not talking, mute yourself with a *6. And you can always come back and forth at will. So anyway, who wants to start off? I know we had a lady here who had some questions or something.
Yes. Hi, it's Judy in Wisconsin.
How you doing, Judy?
Great.
I heard about the cheese.
And the beer.
And the beer, yes.
Yeah. Well, the call last night was great with Rod Klass, and I have quite a history with him and his congressional documents and all that. But my question is, I've looked at the True Bill that you posted, the latest True Bill that you posted, and
right.
There's two questions I have. I have a county on state court case where they have deemed me a criminal because I simulated legal process, and I would like to put this into the case, file on demand kind of thing. It's not a U.S. The case was, I removed it to U.S. District Court, and the county court just went ahead trespassing right on the U.S. District Court jurisdiction. And so it's remanded. I would like to put this into the case. What do you think about using it?
Well, once it's filed, and once we file it, we'll repost the original that we filed. But once it's filed, you can use it. Now, we do have, let me think about this. We do have a couple of cases that went through on the federal level, and this one here will be filed, again, as soon as we get the money, we'll file it. Once it's filed, then you can use it, absolutely. I've already used a paper we filed in a case. It was an information on, ultimately, on sovereign citizens and the assault of the courts upon people that believe that they're sovereign and to what extremes they go to, totally illegal. So I've used that in a case not long ago, just recently. But don't use it until it's actually filed. We'll let you know when it's filed. Matter of fact, you'll see up there that it was filed. How did we write it up? Let me see if we wrote it up as if it was filed yet or not, because we were anticipating.
August 11th or something on it for a date. Proposed.
Yeah, that's Monday, and we don't know whether that's going to happen yet. You know, again, it's all about money, which I'm going to ask again for those who are believing what NLA is doing and participating with NLA. I mean, anybody that's a member in NLA, you know, I believe they became a member because they believe what we're doing could work to save the nation. If everyone were to give $5 a month, I'm telling you, we'd have plenty of money to be able to do all the things we have to do. Right now, we have a paper that we need $6,000 to file. And we can't file it until we get $6,000. So
that's what I wanted to find out, if it was a good idea or not to file it. My case is next week, and so it's kind of imminent. And
I wouldn't use it. But when you say it's next week, what does that mean? Are you going to trial next week?
It's called a pretrial, and actually, I think they're going to dismiss the case. But I'd like to get this.
Well, you know, a pretrial. There's no such thing as a pretrial. You know, you go
know.
To trial. What is all this baloney? Object
to
the whole thing.
In one of those pretrial hearings, they can dismiss a case, and they've done it.
Well, they do, and they can, per se, in their own crazy world, they can do it.
Right.
But in the law, they can't do it. You know, they do it all the time. It's true, you know. But it's not common law. That proves you're not on the common law side of the court. You can say, hey, look, it appears that we're not on the common law side of the court. Are we in equity or where are we? You know, what's the jurisdiction here, Judge? That's what you want to know. Matter of fact, I would ask the lawyer. I never thought about trying to get the lawyer. I go to the lawyer first. Excuse me, what jurisdiction do you think we're in? Because you pulled this thing here, you know. Remember, a judge can't make a decision to throw a case out. You have an affidavit in there?
I did earlier. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah, but it's still in the record?
Yeah.
And you moved it over into the federal court?
I did it. Yeah, I did. It was in the federal court for about 4 months before the judge ruled it in, on it and remanded it. So actually, they trespassed on the U.S. District Court's jurisdiction at that time, if that matters at all.
Who remanded it?
The U.S. District Court judge.
Hmm.
It's all a circus. You know, the whole
yeah,
thing is.
Yeah, I know. You know. We know. But, you know, you got to be on top of them and ahead of them. And if you're not, then they do walk all over you. And, you know, and that's that. There's nothing you could do. I don't know how he can remand it. You know.
Well, he has to do something. And actually, they arrested me and put me in jail for 2 nights before it was remanded. So that's pretty serious, I think.
But what exactly is the interpretation of remand?
It means that they are sending it back to the state court because they've decided based on some case law that
okay,
they pull out somewhere, you know.
Okay, to return. That's it.
Yeah.
So they returned it back to the state, and now you're saying next week you're going back to the state?
Yeah, it's a pretrial, and I think they're just trying to figure out how to get rid
of it. Well, what made you think that you had the ability to move it into the federal court in the first place?
Well, there was a number of reasons, and I can't even speak about that now. It's been so long.
Well, you see, that's the key. That is the key right there. This is the federal court's way of getting rid of it and not listening to it, and you probably didn't couch your paper correctly enough to get through it. What you got to do, remember, you know, the only cases a federal court can actually hear is when you have a constitutional issue. If you don't have a constitutional issue, they can't hear your case. And for instance, in Article 3, judicial power, in Section 1, it says the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one United States Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as Congress may find the time ordain or establish. Then Section 2 goes on to say the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution and the laws of the United States. So, hang on, let me get a few people in my... A couple people are calling me. Hey, I'm in conference right now. If you guys want to join, it's over in the state. It's over in the regular room.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
They arrested her. The judge said she violated something that he said in his court. They arrested her for it and said that she was imitating a judicial process or something like that.
Yeah,
and then
what did you do? What did she do? What did you do?
I was bringing a Bill Thornton common law court of record case, and that's when the trouble started, way back last
right.
fall.
Well, you know, you do have to understand what you're doing before you do that because they could play that game, you know. And
so they throw her in jail for 2 days. I mean,
right.
They threw her in jail for two. Look, if you go to a federal court and you don't belong there, the only thing they should be able to do is say you don't belong here because you don't have a constitutional issue, let's say, with the state, right? But how can the other court say that she did something criminal? Trying to move a common law court through and running it up to the federal court, especially if there's fraud involved. So that means the federal court is in on it too now.
Well, absolutely, they are. Hang on 1 second. Hey, Roger, we're in on a Saturday night call. I don't know if you want to join us. I see you
Thursday
calling
night,
me.
John. Thursday.
Thursday. Why don't I say Saturday night on Thursday?
We're trying to get ahead of ourselves.
We're in on a Thursday night call.
Okay, yeah. I got two quick questions, but it depends. We're about to do our first election meeting Saturday for our 4 regional meetings to stand up our statewide grand jury across Florida. Okay. And we're curious about, should we do the same sort of paperwork to memorialize the meeting as we did with the county-based meeting?
Well, no, you don't need to do that at all, because a unified common law grand jury is a collection of all the grand juries across Florida, and all you need is call a meeting with all the people, and as long as 25 or more show up, you're good. And they don't even have to be NLA members. They'd just be people that want to do it. You know, it doesn't really matter, because now you're a jury.
Just take roll call, that's all.
Yeah.
You don't
have to take roll call, no, because you don't need to know who's there. You don't need names. But all you need to know is that there is at least 25 people in the room, and on HD you can see that. And we've always, whenever we've done anything, our first one was done physically down in New York City, okay, and we had 26 people there. And after that, we did them all online, and we always have 40 to 60 or even more, 70 people, you know. And I think we did a national one where we had about 140 or 150 people. So
if you go over 25, do they all vote? Or do you
absolutely. Absolutely. What I do is this, is I make it very simple, because you don't want to get everybody into voting one way or another. You really look at, you're trying to get a positive vote out of the whole thing. And someone else talking there? Gerard,
that's
you there?
Gerard.
Gerard?
Sounds like Gerard. He's gone.
All right. What you do, just so you know, we're on a call, there's like 37, 40 people here. I don't know.
Sorry.
But that's okay. They should hear this anyway.
Okay.
What you do is you call the call, and you have your whole agenda ready. You know, you're going to lay out your case, and then you're going to ask for a vote. And a vote before discussion. There is no discussion until you take the first vote, because everybody may agree automatically right off the top. But if you lay out your case, okay, and if you do it well enough, then you take the vote, then there's no need to discuss it. So what happens is I take the vote. I say, you know, anybody who is against it, that they should, come in. They should then raise their hand and comment. And after you do that, then you could discuss other things, but it's done then. You know, I mean, if there's someone who decided not to do it, okay, that they didn't want to do it, then you let them, make their peace, and it might be two or three people. You let them all make their peace.
Yep.
And then you call for it again and say, okay, so you run your points. Whatever they have to say, you can then give a debate against it. And at some point, you stop talking and you say, okay, you know, let's take another vote. And you find out if these three people still disagree. If they still disagree, okay, you got them as three. And anybody else disagrees. Nobody else adds on to that? Well, you got three against whatever's in the room, and you go forward now. Now you do whatever it is you were planning to do, the indictment or sending up a true bill or whatever.
And do you need, in order to carry the motion, you need a simple majority?
That's all you need on a grand jury is a simple majority.
Okay.
Yeah, on the jury itself, as you know, it's got to be unanimous.
Hmm. Okay. Is this written up anywhere?
I don't believe we wrote it up. No. We haven't, but you can go do research, and that's how juries have been going, is by majority, so we went by majority also, of course.
Okay.
We've also read you can dwindle down your juries. 25 can dwindle down, you know, if they don't all return back. You know, I think the statutory juries go down to 14. We know they can dwindle down, but I'm not sure how far you can go, and I figure, well, okay, let's do 12. Because 12 is the number of a regular jury, so you can dwindle down to 12.
Yep.
But you look at it, if you're dwindling down to 12, there's something wrong. We're not teaching people right. They're not taking this serious.
Okay.
So we shouldn't dwindle down to 12.
All right.
You know, again, when you call a statewide meeting, you're going to find you're going to have more than you need. And then if you have to come back for a second time to talk, and whoever comes back, and whether that number, you know, if you dwindle down, it shouldn't be much. You might find you'll add on.
Okay. That's enough for that subject. The other one that I would like to bring you up to date on sometime, and maybe not now if it's not appropriate, is Dixie County, the activity we're involved in there.
Yeah, okay. I got so many things going on, I'm not sure what's going on in Dixie.
Well,
the land of Dixie.
Yeah, we talked with you about it a couple days ago, and it's where we had an NLA guy become the grand jury foreman.
Oh, yeah. Very good. I think everything is appropriate to be able to talk.
Okay. So Friday they had the meeting, and the intent was to prep the jury with some background material, but I think we may have told you the jury came up in all antagonistic towards the foreman even before he'd said much of anything, so we knew something was up. Turns out the state attorney had called all the jurors in front of the grand jury meeting and prepped them. In addition, during the meeting, the state attorney actually took over the meeting and dominated the whole thing and controlled it. So we've really put in a bill of informations with the list of criminal behaviors of the state attorney.
I'm dying to get this. Could you guys send me a copy of this?
Yep.
Do we have an affidavit from this guy now?
He put a bill of information, signed it, and notarized it and put it into the court record.
He's got to do an affidavit. He's not to act as a jurist, as I'm sure. Well, you realize that, I hope, right?
Yeah,
but he cannot be a true jurist on our side. Okay, he's on that jury. He's not on our
right.
Okay.
Right.
He is a person that has witnessed a criminal act, and he has also been violated himself for his right to act as a jurist, and in this case, really the foreman. And everything that has taken place, he needs to understand. He needs to sit down and write this paper right away, because you forget as days go on.
Right. Right.
And whatever happened recently, he needs to get that on paper. He needs to bring it together in an affidavit form, just as he's a person writing an affidavit of truth, and then he needs to take that, and get it signed. Now, I'd like to get a copy of that.
Okay.
If he could do two or three originals, he should definitely hold one himself. And if he can send me an original and you guys original, we can have originals. Now, I got another one with Commander Walt, and he's got a similar problem from a different vantage point. But again, jury tampering, proving that these people, that nobody cares. The judge knows they don't care. They all are working together just to do
what. Well, let me tell you what's going on here, though. That's very interesting. So it turns out that we learned from a secondhand source that the anticipation was that because he had called the jury together, that he was going to have a criminal complaint against the judge that was the presiding judge over the grand jury. The reason they anticipated that was that she's already got 2 to 3 serious complaints against her, including one from the clerk of the court, for politicking from the bench. Mm-hmm. So it turned out that they had the circuit court chief judge in town, and they had 4 armed deputies at the door, thinking that there was going to be a conflict between the state attorney and the grand jury foreman when the grand jury foreman tried to bring the criminal charge up against the judge, and the state attorney was going to be there to protect the judge.
Right.
Turns out that, of course, that wasn't the complaint. The complaint was about Common Core and the criminality behind Common Core. So what happened subsequent to that meeting is that the supervising presiding judge of the circuit court has sent a notice, not directly by email, but through a copy to the state attorney, to the foreperson, saying that he, by his own order, is now taking over the role of presiding judge of the grand jury. But we know that that's really part of the conspiracy, in addition, because the clerk of the court, we filed our papers at 4:40 or something like that, just before 5 o'clock when they closed. At 5:45, the clerk of the court emailed a copy of the public record to the state attorney that was named for the criminal charges. So she took it out of the record and mailed it to the accused. Instead, she was supposed to mail it. Her duty is to give it to the sheriff.
Wow. You see, all of this has to be documented and sworn to, and as many people, and if there are other people who have witnessed parts of this thing,
yep,
they need to join in with, you know, with collaborating affidavits. And
so tomorrow, the additional information is going in as an addendum to the Bill of Information that basically makes the critical points and says the judge has to recuse himself. The chief circuit judge, because there's a conspiracy afoot.
Mm-hmm. Well, be careful. Really got to think this out a bit, because remember, you don't want to give any credibility to the statutory grand jury. The statutory grand jury has no lawful right to be where they're at and doing what they're doing. As a matter of fact, the whole thing, they're part of the fraud. But what you need to really be focusing in on is the fact that these people, this shows the fraud in the courts, that the judges, the prosecutors, everyone, total control of the grand jury. There is no way that a grand jury can actually go up against a, you know, to discover a fraud or crime and go up against them and file a paperwork, because they're stopping it. They're removing paperwork. They're doing this. They're doing that. This is huge for us because it helps our case. So the information should be written from that vantage point without giving credibility to the jury in itself. And the fact that there is RICO going on in a whole process, it's a corporate game, and it's a corporate court, it's a corporate jury, and even in that, there is no way that people can get justice. And all the people, meanwhile, believe that it's real. They believe that it's part of law, and it's not law. It's just a total all-out fraud.
Yep.
So just make sure you write it right. If you want some collaboration on that, I think you should get some from us up here and get some thoughts. I'm definitely going to write a paper myself, and I want to get that info. I'm going to attach that. I got two other cases, one with that Commander Walt guy, and there was someone else that was online that's supposed to send me a some information on their vantage point of fraud in the jury.
Okay. So I'm going to mail it to you right now. So if you look at the top of your stack, you and Gerard, you'll have this bill of information.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Good. All right. And if you want to join the call, we're on the law call right now. So.
Okay. How do I do that? Just stand.
Standby? Just come in on Monday's call. You know, we got about 70 people in here right now.
Okay.
So.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye. Ken, how you doing, Ken? You want to come in on the call?
Yeah, I'm good. I just want to ask you who that guy was last night.
Which one?
The guy that was...
I was talking to?
Yes.
Rob, what's his name?
Rod Class.
Claire, yeah.
Class?
Rod Class, yeah. Yeah, go put his name in YouTube. You'll see him everywhere.
Okay.
So.
Hey, John.
Okay, let me get back. What?
Talk about timing.
Yeah. Did you realize that mortgage that I was talking to you about down in the city of Bill and Paul's, that was Chase Bank, and the two lawyers that foreclosed on that house did it for Chase, and they did a non-judicial closure in New York, which is illegal.
Well, you know, if he comes online, we'll talk to him about it. He's got to get into the details. He's got to forget all his paperwork. He's got to move to an affidavit, and he's got to go forward with the fact that with violations of his unalienable rights. He's got to move it into federal court. He's got to get serious.
Hasn't Chase been in court over this very thing? No, it's a big thing.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm getting interference. Say it again.
Well, they got fireworks across the street. That's what that was.
Okay. Hasn't Chase what?
Didn't Chase get in trouble for this? Haven't they already been pulled on the carpet for this kind of crap? This is what's going on, right?
Well, yeah. I think it was Chase that did get.
Yeah. So I think he should do some research and find out who they did this to, and figure out and attach himself to that case or whatever. But anyway, go ahead on.
Yeah. I think, again, he's been violated. He needs to file paperwork. He needs to. There's no due process here. They've sold his property without due process. They've taken his property and sold it without due process. And even their You know, their circus court that they had, if I understand it correctly, the circus court took place after the sale of the property anyway. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And
yep.
And the court that was listening in was a romper room court from the administrative process of something in the city with rentals or something. What was
this? It's landlord tenant court in the city.
Yeah, it doesn't even have authority to hear nothing. So the whole thing, if he goes away, and look at, they also it's all RICO, okay. And
right.
Also they came out after him and won money, so it's extortion. They're threatening him with money costs. That's extortion. That's what the mafia does. And Vinny comes down to your shop and he says, "Hey, I'm going to protect your windows. We don't want to see them broken here. You know, you give me 50 bucks a week and we're good, you know." And Vinny comes back and doesn't get his 50 bucks and on Saturday and Sunday his windows are broken. And Monday he comes back and he collects his 100 bucks, you know. And that's exactly what this court is doing. You know?
It sounds like you know that scheme too well. You lived through that.
Well, it might have been Tony, you know?
Yeah. Oh, what end were you on, the receiving or the giving? Anyway, let's not go there.
So anyway, that's what's going on. It's called extortion, man. You know?
Well,
right,
I'd like to know what that woman did that filed a common law case that allowed them to go ahead and arrest her, saying that she was imitating a judicial process. So she filed
a common law case
in state court, and then they come out and arrest her, and then they remand her case back. I mean, this is our people that believe in court of records. What could she have done in her paperwork so bad that the judge saw fit to charge her with something from, apparently they found some case law, and they sent it up, and they said, look, this has to come back. She did this. We're going to put her in jail for, well, actually, they didn't remand it until she was in jail for 2 days.
The facts aren't presented quite properly here. I did a Bill Thornton case, and it just set off all kinds of problems. I couldn't believe the number
but
of people.
Let's step through it slowly. Let's start off from the beginning. You're in court. How did you get in court? Did you go to court, or they took you to court?
I brought a common law court of record case.
Okay, so you opened up a common law court of record against some individuals for what?
It was about the bank to court about a foreclosure that had taken place unlawfully.
Okay, so it was an unlawful foreclosure. So you went to the court, and you should have done what you should have done was a fraud on a court case at the same time as a common law case, though. But okay, so you're going into the court, and you wrote that I'm one of the people of what state are you in?
Wisconsin. But the case,
okay, so
the case lasted about 10 days, and the judge dismissed it.
Right, but you went into the court. Okay, you went into the court. You wrote a paper, and the paper said that I am so and so, one of the people of Wisconsin, and in this court of record, I'm suing A, B, and C for this purposes. And you called it an action at law, and not a complaint, but an action at law. And then you wrote down. You did an affidavit of truth, and it was unrebutted because they never rebut it. So it was probably unrebutted, so no one ever answered it. So you had an affidavit of truth that was subject matter jurisdiction. That gave subject matter jurisdiction. You set up the proper jurisdiction for common law, and then what happened?
It didn't even get that far. It got dismissed within a week to 10 days.
Well, then what did you do then?
It doesn't have to be.
Well, I brought contempt on the court. For the magistrate acting outside of his authority. But by that time, things had just gotten unbelievably out of control in the county, and I had the sheriff's department after me. It was a conspiracy, I believe, to protect the bank.
Okay, so you wrote a paper called Contempt on the Court, correct?
After the judge, the magistrate dismissed it, and I said that he didn't have authority and came back in.
Did you call it a writ of error, or what did you call it?
Yes, I put in a couple of writs. They were ignored.
Well, no. You don't worry about being ignored. Being ignored is irrelevant. You got to put turn your steamroller on. Okay, that's what you got to do in court. You see, they want to frustrate you, so you'll do things two, three, four times. You know what's the definition? We've heard it a lot recently. What's the definition of insanity? It's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And so you just do one. That's all you need. You move to the next step. The question is, do you know what the next step is? And that's the problem that people don't know. They don't know what the next step is. But it's always the same thing, but moving in a different direction. And so, you see, once the judge did what he did, okay, well, were you at a hearing before he did what he did?
No, there was no hearing. So
you filed the papers, and then he just dismissed it?
He dismissed it. I had made an error in some of the paperwork, and he told me what the error was, and I corrected it immediately. And then he, you know, it was done. They pulled up charges against me, and I was arrested once, and then I was arrested a second time after I had removed.
What did you do? Hold it. I'm confused on when you got arrested. You did a writ of error first, then you got arrested, or this is before you did a writ of error?
Well, it's probably a waste of time to go into all the details because it's been pretty complicated, and I didn't, of course, know everything at the time. You know,
that's the problem. You got to be real careful. You got to know what you're doing, and before you do it, you know, I tell people if they want to really practice, go to traffic court. Worst thing you could do is lose there, and you have to pay the silly fine. And at least you've got a little bit of an education for it, and that's the best place to learn. But you got to know what to do and what the next steps are, and you can't wait too long. When things move, you got to jump on it next and go.
And she's fighting for her mortgage. That's why she ended up there before she was arrested.
Right, right. I understand
that. She's fighting for her house, so she took a stab at it, which is applaudable. But
right now, so you filed the case. What was the first court you filed the case in? Was that a state Supreme Court?
It was the county court. There's no superior court in this state. They claim there is no such thing.
Okay, so it's a county court, and the county court is a... Did you look into the Constitution to see if a county court is a court of record or a common law court?
Yes, I found it in the original statutes. It's not in the... It's not
the Constitution. So it's in the statutes. Good enough. It's in the statutes. It's a common law court, or do they call it a court of record?
Court of record. All courts will be a court of record.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's very good. All courts will be a court of record. That's probably a reiteration of what's in the Constitution. You should double check because it sounds like that's what they're doing. But you got this statute that requires their courts to be court of record, and that's good enough. That legislators have told the courts you're a court of record. So now you define a court of record as a common law court, and that's very easy. There's plenty of stuff out there to prove that. You can do a memorandum. You got to keep your things clean. What you need to do is go back and start all over again. I would even open up a new index number. And, let's think about that. Well, you might want to, otherwise you'll end up in jail again, maybe, because this judge is out of control.
County is out of control. The deputies, everybody, it's like they all ganged up on me. It was incredible. The corporation council, everyone, it was incredible what happened.
Well, yeah, that's what they do. They stick with each other. Yeah, they're evil. Let me tell you, they don't even understand how evil they are, but the day is coming. We're going to show them how evil they are. We're going to show them. We're going to stick that mirror in their face, and they're going to see. But I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's horrible.
I was speaking with Bill Thornton periodically, and I was getting advice from him about what to do each step of the way, and I was trying to do everything that I could, but it was moving so fast. It was hard to really keep up. What they were throwing at me was so fast. It was just
okay,
really
well,
hard.
Look, here's the case you got to go in on. Now, you still in your home or no?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And did they foreclose yet?
It's like I say, it's complicated. They foreclosed. They had a sheriff's sale. Somebody came and rescued, paid it off. The interest got transferred to that person, and it's just a complicated case, like all of them can be, you know.
Right, but are you safely in your home for a while yet, or no?
I Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Here's what you need to do, okay? And you need to go up, and you're going to study it a little bit more and get from a different perspective. You know, when it comes to a mortgage, there is a very simple way to get around all this. First of all, everything they did was fraud on the court. Okay, they defrauded you because they did this mortgage, they did this whole thing, this foreclosure, without you even being there or knowing about it, I presume. They probably sent you a paper, but they didn't send you anything concerning the court, or did they?
They sent me paperwork. Yes, I was working on trying to defend at that time. That was 2 years ago now. And, of course, I didn't. I was making mistakes and not doing things properly. And,
okay, well, here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. You have to sit down and write yourself a paper and take your time and do it slowly and add more and more and think it out and read and learn. You do that on the website. Go up and read our cases. Particularly, we have cases up on the line on National Liberty Alliance. If you go to essays and lectures, just highlight that, and then go over to Court Access, highlight that, and then click on court case examples, okay? Now, when you click on court case examples, there'll be some framework cases. And one of the cases is an arrest of judgment. You want to pay careful attention to that one because that's one that you can use. As a matter of fact, I think that is an actual, I think that's on a mortgage. Let's see. Let me open it up and see. I think it's on a mortgage. Let's see. Name of company, okay. Plaintiff, your name, one of the people in your state, and in this court of record sues the name of the company, its owner, there and after the defendant. So you want to sue the company, you want to sue the owners. And you also want to sue the judge, and you want to sue the lawyers for fraud, judgment procured through fraud under, here we have NYCVP Law 5015. Look that up. Read about it, and Federal Rule 60B. So you can use both, but look New York up, read about it, and then look into your laws in your state, and you'll find something similar to it, because most states pretty much have a lot of the same stuff, and have been injured for the same, so on and so forth. Okay, so this is on a, I'm pretty sure, let's see, plaintiff against counterplaintiff amount, 67 judgments. I'm pretty sure this is on a... a mortgage. Okay, you confirm that it's a common law procedure. Refer to the laws of the case. no sworn affidavit. Key thing. You will find they didn't have a sworn affidavit, therefore there was no case. Anything they did was illegal. They can't make a ruling on anything where there is no sworn affidavit. Okay? And you'll find this information in this paperwork. This is a good framework for you. It's very simple. It's short, but it gets to the point. But there's more information on other cases you can get, and you can kind of bring things together, you know, sort of like, just bring it together. You've got memorandums that you'll want to attach and refer to. You want to write the details of your case. But here's the bottom line, okay? That court, it's fraud on a court because they filed this case against you. And remember, you got to start off at some place, after the few paragraphs, you want to get into the fact that you've just become conscious of something. Matter of fact, you can put that into your affidavit. Do a new affidavit because it's a new case. But put it into the affidavit that you just become aware that you've been defrauded and that, you know, you really thought you were in a court of law, you were trying to figure things out, and you discovered you've been in a foreign court all along. And that the magistrate was actually a chancellor, and you didn't know he was a chancellor, and you were in a chancery court, and you didn't know you were in a chancery court. And by the way, you can come back and re-listen to this recording to get all this later, because it'll be posted tonight. And so you're in a chancery court, and now you've realized that there's fraud in a court. Now, even in their own court, they require, in order for that judge to make a decision, he's got to have subject matter jurisdiction. To have subject matter jurisdiction, they have to have an affidavit. That's what gives it to them. So if there is no affidavit, and there isn't, there never is, okay, that's fraud on the court right there. Second, they didn't have subject matter jurisdiction, okay? And the reason why is because they came out after you. You have the right of due process, and they violated your due process, and therefore that now that makes it a federal offense, by the way, because of the violation of due process. So you do all this stuff in that county court, and you file all your papers in that county court, and then you move it the same day or the next day, you file another paper, and you move it into federal court. And then you continue. Now, it takes a little skill in writing and stuff, and you got to figure it out. And I think between a lot of the paperwork up there, you'll be able to get a lot of it, and then you can come back and ask a few questions.
And what about all the fees that are charged for, I mean, it's going to cost, you know, nearly $1,000 to do two courts
like that.
What?
Justice doesn't cost anything in America. When you're going into a common law court, it's free.
I understand that, but they won't take the case unless you admit that you're a pauper.
No, well, look, you do a file on demand, you put the paperwork in, you file it in the county, you tell them you don't pay, you're not a corporation, you're one of the people, and the people don't pay, and you give them the court case that says you don't pay. You should find that up also on the examples page. And you tell them you don't pay, and they'll send it back, and that becomes your evidence, and then you move it on to federal court. Now, you don't pay in federal court either. Remember, once you pay, now you're becoming... Gerard, you might want to, or Ken, you might want to, what do you call it, hit your mic, mute your mic. You don't pay, because once you pay, you're moving into their nisi prius courts. You
yeah.
see, you can't get into that side of the court. So you refuse to pay. Look, when I went down to file a paper in the federal court, they wanted money. And I said, no, I don't pay. I'm one of the people. And I had a file on demand on top. Well, I didn't put it on the top at the point. I had it in my hands. I then handed the paper of the file on demand to the woman. And she looked at that and said, oh, okay, well, you need to fill out a form. I said, no, I don't fill out a form. I'm one of the people. And she says, well, okay. And then she took the paper and she filed it. That was that. And there was no argument, but that file on demand is important because I served notice on that file on demand. She's going to become part of that case because she's going to break the law, and it's 1 to 3 years in jail before not filing. And that's what's on that paper. It's called a file on demand. And you'll see that we have file on demands on all of our papers. And so once it gets into the federal court, okay, you have to write your papers and you have to put a copy of everything that they rejected, including the rejection. If they send it back in an envelope and they sent you a letter, fine, include that. And include a copy of your whole case, include a picture of the, you know, a copy of the envelope. And that becomes your, that now is becomes your evidence. It's referred to as evidence. You know, Exhibit A or Exhibit 1, whatever you want to call it. And now write your federal case. And your federal case is they violated your unalienable rights, a Fifth Amendment. You have a right to due process. They hijacked you into a foreign court. They performed fraud on a court and stole your property. And there was no, the judge didn't have, the court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. And so you want to make all these points. But one of the key things is to set your jurisdiction in place to let the federal court know that they have jurisdiction. And, again, if you search our papers and look at some of the stuff, we did some paperwork on our news. If you click on news and you read some of our cases there, you'll see some paperwork which talks about some of this stuff also. So you can kind of just bring it all together and create your own paper. Use a lot of our words. You use the cases, everything, footnotes. Whatever is appropriate, you just take it and put it together in your paper. But one of the key things is you want to give them as much constitutional focus. You don't want to use any statutes in order to go into federal court, okay? You will use a statute, for instance, the fact that this was supposed to be, the county court was supposed to be a common law court. It was called a court of record, and here is a statute. And you write the statute out, let the judge, you know, that's in your paperwork. And they ignored that. Instead, they hijacked you. And the reason why you're coming here is because you have been promised, all the people, all the states have been promised a Republican form of government. That's Article 4, I believe, Section 4. And also, you'll maybe refer to that the judge didn't obey the law and violated your unalienable rights, and they were bound to obey the law. That's Article 6 of the United States Constitution. And also, this court, meaning the federal court, has the authority to hear this court because it has judicial power that extends to all cases in law and equity that arises under the Constitution. And clearly, this case arises under the Constitution. You're here because they took your property without due process. You're here because they violated numerous other unalienable rights. And so you want to sue all these people. You want to sue all the lawyers. You want to sue all the judge. You want to sue the banker, you know, the mortgage holder. You want to find out who owns that company. You want to sue them. And I already said you want to sue the lawyer for the whoever's representing them. Usually they are lawyers, you know. But you sue them all. And that's where you go with this.
Perfect.
Right?
Thank you. I had one other question about your Truebill. I read over it today, and I saw just a few grammatical things in it, like, you know, apostrophes and stuff. I was wondering if you'd like any help with the writing, because I've done quite a bit of edit, not legal paperwork, but just, you know, tuning things up.
Right. Well, we do have some people, and we haven't gotten it to that person yet because it's really, it's an almost finished product, but it's still draft. And I usually send it over to a person who looks at this stuff, and they're not perfect either. Still, some stuff gets by, but sometimes we'll have you know, problems or mistakes, and when you read it, you find out it's not necessarily our words; it's the court. And we don't want to mess around with the court. You know, when we quote a case or quote something in law, the way it's written up, we don't change any of the grammar. We don't change sometimes the spelling. But we don't change the punctuation, you know. But, you know, sometimes things do get through. But remember, you know, they're far worse than us, as Thornton says. Go read their stuff. It's like kindergarten, you know. But we will run it through. What offhand are you talking about? Maybe just to give me a pointer.
Well, I could send it back to you with, you know, marked up if you'd like. But
yeah, if you want to. Just put it in red so it's easy for me to see.
Okay. I just want to make the offer if you'd like any help like that, because I did work with Rod, like, several years ago. I was helping him edit his documents that went into D.C. court. So, you know, at that time.
All right. Well, send me the corrections on that and put your basic information in, you know, your phone number and stuff in the email, and we'll send you some documents when we're ready to get to that point. You know.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot, John.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anybody else got anything?
Yes.
Dave.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi,
yes.
John.
Yes.
How you doing?
Oh.
Okay. I filed some papers with the court. One was with the Bank of America. They tried to take me to court, and another one was with the utility company. And I had taken advice, I believe I could have gotten it from you, and I filed it, and it was to Mr. Bank of America. And the other one was the Mr. of the utility company. And both of the cases were thrown out. Thank you very much for that help.
Mm-hmm. They were thrown out?
They were both thrown out.
Okay,
and
so in other words...
18,000. Yes. The judge,
they were coming against you, and he threw it out.
Right. And then I appealed it, and I said I wrote a letter back to them, and I took it to the courts, and the judge did not want to sign off on it. And so then what they did, they were slick. They pushed a court date through, unbeknown to me, so I didn't get the second letter. And then the day when I got it, it was supposed to be done Friday before. So I went right back down to the court. I filed it, did a rebuttal on it, and I said, and I made the copies, and I said, I want you to stamp them now. They said, well, it should have been done Friday. I said, I want it stamped now. And I said, and I want your initials. They stamped it. The letter came back the week later. Everything was thrown out.
So thank you for that help.
Okay.
And,
well,
being thrown out
was a good thing, then. That's the point, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
and,
so they were coming against you. You responded, and the case was thrown out.
Right, because there's no such a Mr. or Mrs. on those. So that's what people need to know, too. And so they're also coming after me now, again, with my mortgage. That's not even a mortgage. It's a called, oh, God. After your home is paid for, what is it called?
The Siskiyou account?
No, it's...
Reconveyance.
Like a home improvement, what's that called?
Okay, well, you went in, you bought a house, and you paid the mortgage off?
Right, see, because even in 2009, when Obama paid all the mortgages off, you know?
Oh, okay, so he paid.
And
well,
see, they kept
well,
on changing
really,
my...
That was a fraud. He didn't pay anything off.
Okay.
What he did is they there was a robbery took place, and he was complicit in that. That's what took place. You see, because there is no mortgage to be paid off. It doesn't really exist.
Right. And it's called...
equity loan?
Equity loan, exactly.
An equity
and
loan.
I said, wait a second. I said, so what they did to me is they did it four times. And I said, first of all, because when I had the case, oh, God, they changed... I did my mortgage with... the bank for 15 years, fixed rate, no prepayment penalty. I paid my taxes and insurance on my own. Next thing, they sold my mortgage, and it was sold like four or five times. Then they went from my mortgage from 900 almost up to close to 5,000 or 6,000. So I said to them, because I used to work down there, I don't want to disclose where I work, and I said, well, first of all, so I contacted my attorney, and I said, look, I said, I figured out what they were doing. I said, they changed my mortgage. I said, but the problem is, I said, all the deeds, when you change mortgages and stuff like that, you got to file them in the town clerk's office. So we did a conference call on the phone, and I said, I figured out exactly what they were doing. No one, and I said to them, I asked my attorney, I said, ask all these questions, but let me ask the last one. I said, well, who signed my name to change all this? Then all of a sudden, they all started passing the buck. Oh, we made a mistake. They bought my mortgage right back down to what it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the average Joe Schmo doesn't know, you know. And
well, once they sold it, that's a third party. It has nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
They need to go see the first party, one of the first parties, in order to get their money back. Because don't come to me for it. I don't have a contract to you. We have no agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing is when they sue you, you can also put in the paperwork for that this can't go forward because they have failed to, what do they call it, failed to add, I forget the proper word here, a necessary party. And so that's another problem because, and of course, where's the contract? There is no contract. Anything they give you will be a copy anyway with your signature on it, but still you won't find a contract.
Well, you know what they did? I'd like to share this with you and anybody who has a mortgage. So I said to them, I said, first of all, I never even have taken a mortgage out with you. I said, please send me my contract. So what they did for the original one, so it's like four or five times, they deleted the whole name and everything out, right? And they wrote note in caps, N-O-T-E. I said, well, where does your name and where is my contract with you?
and what did they say? Nothing?
They were passing the buck.
Yeah.
You know? So
well, that's
like,
it. You know, look,
I'm
that
30.
Is the key point there. That is the key point. You can always rest assured in most cases that they've already moved the contract to one person to another. Like you said, they sold it six times. And your first order of business in court is the fact that, hey, first of all, I have no agreement with these people. I don't know who they are. If they think they have a contract with me, let me see it because I've never spoken to these people. And you can't, if I was in a contract with someone else, they can't just give my contract away. Now, first of all, there's no contract that exists anyway. But this is just part of their game that you can play, and they can't do nothing about that. then you can move off into the fact that at some point, you know, that they don't have any subject matter jurisdiction because we're in a court, and where's the affidavit? There's no sworn affidavit. An affirmation is not a sworn affidavit to begin with, and it's a third party. You know, it's a lawyer making an affirmation. It's meaningless. He's not an injured party. He's not the other side. And on top of that, again, you know, when you really push comes to shove, everybody's been paid off anyway because they took the money 3 days after the loan went out. Your signature was for the sole purpose of removing money out of the Fed from your SESQ account, which we don't have anything to do. This is the only time I suggest to people that they can use the fiction part. In other words, just make the point. You know, their whole fiction is a fiction. It has nothing to do with me. Even your money is a fiction. It's all debt anyway. You're going to have as much debt, you know. You're better off not having the debt in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Get gold, get silver, put that in your hands.
And when I asked them, and so what happened, I was like 39 days, a month and a half behind my mortgage. They called me and said if I did not pay this amount by the 38th day, they are going to start legal actions. So then they called me and said, are you going to send us some money or what? I said, first of all, for 39 days...
Sounds like extortion to me. But
that's exactly. So this is what they were doing up till like 2 weeks ago. So they called me, and I started getting a little panic and stuff. And I said, wait. I asked them, I said, I want my contract with you. So then they called, do you have the money, yes or no? I said, first of all, no. They said, we'll have to take legal action. I said, you know what? Do whatever you got to do. Because everything was paid off because the credit union... Now, this was sold like 3 or 4 times. Now, they filed belly up, and they're no longer in existence. And that's who I had dealt with, which they got the money and pocketed themselves because it was a home equity. That's what it was.
So they got Obama
loan.
Money?
They got the home equity loan twice.
Well, they got Obama money, too, and you had brought that up earlier. And
right.
That, you know, even though that whole thing was a fraud because all he did was robbery because he took money and gave it to the bankers. And then the bankers still didn't give credit to the people whose houses that he paid off.
Right.
So what's that all about? I mean, it's just a double, triple whammy.
And also, you know? They stole the pension from my husband that was in Bank of America, and they kept that. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. That was left to me, you know? And then I saw on the news not too long, about a year or so ago, this woman, her husband had passed away, and so she put a $250,000 in an annuity with Bank of America, which I think before was Bank of America was like either Fleet or whatever bank it was. And they took her money. Her money's gone. And guess what? Eyewitness News Channel 7 did the interview, and they couldn't believe their ears neither. Like, well, where is this woman's money? So they've been defrauding, you know, whether it's our pension, annuity, a CD account, a lot of crazy things have been happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, anyway, I'm glad it looks it turned out pretty good for you. Now, are you still running into more problems?
Record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1
for more
options.
It sounds like coming over your end or someone's end. I don't know. I don't know what that is. So, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, no, 1 second. Hello?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay. I don't know why that came out.
All right, well, generally speaking, everything turned out pretty good, but are you running into another problem now?
Yeah, you just gave us some points because now I got to file this for my mortgage. So it's like there was no deed. There was no affidavit, so we just got to
Well, no, there was no contract.
No
affidavit,
okay.
You know, which gives subject matter jurisdiction. Obama money paid all this off anyway, so it's just a double fraud. And you know, there really is no mortgage to pay off. It's just an organized crime way of really it's extortion. Everything they're doing is extortion. When you put it onto the record, they're gonna want to run from you.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah,
know, we do
well,
have some example stuff up there. You should read.
Okay, and I told him, I said, and so when I filed it, and again, I didn't pay nothing to file any of this. They didn't want to accept it, and I said, oh, yeah, you will. And they all came up looking at me real funny, and I said, I want this filed. And I said, I want your initials, you know.
All right, well, hopefully things will work out well with the next round with those people.
Yes, and how many states are all the states now?
48.
There's 48. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. So we just continue to write the letters for the foreclosures, because the ones who are doing the foreclosures on the property, it's the attorneys.
Right. Yeah, and they're making more money again.
Right. It's the attorneys that are making the money. And I guess the judges aren't even signing off on when people are doing
the bankers and the attorneys. And remember, judges are attorneys. They're all making money all the time. They're making money, you know, hand over fist. I mean, it's just pretty pitiful. So.
The bankers, lawyers, and who else?
Well, the bankers and the lawyers, ultimately. Just remember, judges are lawyers. They're making money with the lawyers. They're all making money.
And the real estate people?
Well, you know, I don't know so much about that. They're just selling property. But it's the bankers and the lawyers that have destroyed the country. They're the ones making all the money. Everything, nothing happens in this country without the bankers and lawyers. Nothing.
Right. You're right. So. And the insurance is a little crazy now, too.
Right.
Okay.
All right, well, let's see if we can move on to someone else.
Thank you. Anything else
before we do that?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Hey, don't forget that this program is recorded, so if you miss something, you can go back.
Right.
I mean, I know John says a lot of stuff, and you might miss it, so it's going to be up on the archives. You can always go back and play it and hear it again. Okay.
Yeah, I have a conversation with a guy from time to time, and he's pretty deep in things, and he talks very fast, and he brings up a lot of new stuff that I have never heard. And I record my conversations with him so that I don't have to hold him up, and I can't keep up writing. You know, he talks too fast. And so that's exactly what I do. After the conversation, I go back and I spend hours, playing and rewinding, getting all of the nuggets, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else? Next person.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. How you doing? First
thing. I'm Trisha from Nevada.
How you doing, Trish?
I'm doing terrific, and I'm very impressed with what you folks are doing as well. And I have a couple of questions. I was looking and actually used this traffic one, the verified action jurisdiction is barred. A court lacks personal jurisdiction on behalf of my husband. Mm-hmm. And I had a question on the footnote for jurisdiction. It says it's number 6 in this particular one, and it says, the reference for, well, let me just read. It says, a power constitutionally conferred upon a judge or magistrate to take cognizance of and decide causes according to law and to carry his sentence into execution. And then this reference is 6 PET period 591 9 John 239. Now, that looks mm-hmm. kind of like Bible verses, but I don't think that's what it is. And
oh,
I'm just
no.
What
no,
the references are.
Yeah, that's a reference to some legal papers. You know, often it could be that could be really directed into the jurisprudence, and a lot of that stuff usually is the jurisprudence. And not yeah, is it jurisprudence? No, American. Yeah, American jurisprudence. Oh no, what is that? What it is, Gerard? American jurisprudence?
Yeah,
American.
Yes. They call it AMJUR, American jurisprudence.
Right. So a lot of that is that. Sometimes, like, you'll get something you'll get that in part of a court case because it's referred to in the American jurisprudence. And then, of course, some of it is court cases, but if it's a court case, usually you'll see someone versus someone, and then you'll see all those numbers. So that's generally what that is.
Okay, so they generally know what that is. It is. I've just wondered what it was. So
well, their references. Yes, they. Well, yeah, absolutely. They know. They've got all the books and everything to look that up. If you run that number in the Google, you'll get information on it, and you'll find the actual source.
Okay, excellent. That's
now, remember, American jurisprudence was written ultimately. I believe it was written ultimately by the Supreme Court justices. And it is added and updated from time to time according to their decisions. And American jurisprudence is really very powerful and very helpful to common law, to those of us who are really trying to get into the court, so we can quote them all the time. And every judge is bound to obey it. They're bound to obey it. So if it said that they were bound to obey it, then I'm sure it was American jurisprudence. AM, what would it have been initials? AM something?
It doesn't have AM. It just has 6, PET period, 591, and then a semicolon, 9 John, comma, 23.
Right. What that is basically, I'm sure it's American jurisprudence.
Okay, so. That's fine. That's great. Now, the other thing I noticed regarding this particular action is that it talked about, of course, a driver's license, and that was the only thing that was mentioned specifically in here. So
right,
it,
and basically that's generic. You can use anything now.
Okay, so...
But you'll have to change things around a little bit because there are some laws that you have the right to travel, but go ahead.
Right, right. So if the ticket was issued for something else, because it was similar, he did show a license.
You got to tweak it around, but I will tell you that really your whole case is ultimately you don't want to... Yeah, everything is all about jurisdiction, and then you got it. I used to make the argument that they had to prove jurisdiction, and then we get some clown up there on a bench with a black robe, and he'll say, well, I'm going to decide it's my jurisdiction, hit his hammer down, let's go on with the case. You see, this is how evil these people are. They have no respect for the law. So I don't ask them to prove jurisdiction. I'm not going to tell them they need to prove jurisdiction. I'm going to tell them they ain't got it. And then
right.
I'm going to tell them that if they proceed any further, that their court is susceptible to collateral damage from my court. And
right.
But you got to step back a few steps. If you're going to go into the court, if you're going to, I usually don't go to court for traffic violations. I send my papers in and I attach this silly paper, and I go return for cause across it, and I put it inside the paperwork. It's attached to the paperwork. I do a file on demand, then their silly ticket, and then my paperwork. And so I don't go to court. But if I did go to court, you know, if it was something a little more serious where they might come out and arrest me, you know, then I'll go to court. But if I go to court, the first order of business when you get to speak is you tell them that, you say, Your Honor, have you read my papers? And you let them know that I am here by special appearance. And I believe on the paperwork we write coming in a special appearance, at least the latest ones, where I'm here by special appearance. And special appearance means you're here to test the warrant to see if it's real. And so, and I'm speaking from my court of record, okay? And you don't, and this court has no jurisdiction over me whatsoever. And it doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction, for there is no affidavit against me. It doesn't have personam jurisdiction because it's not a court of record. And the choice of this court is only one, and that is to dismiss it immediately, and I'm not going to charge you for my time to come here. Okay, but if you pursue it and I have to walk out of here with a court date, I'm not coming back here again because we're going to move this over to the federal court. And that's how you got to deal with that. He doesn't have the jurisdiction. You ask him, is this court of record or is this a common law court? And he's not going to answer those questions. You can ask him those questions too first. But the key is they don't have jurisdiction. It's always
right.
The same thing over and over again. It's all about jurisdiction. There's no sense to argue the case at all. Nothing, none whatsoever. It's just why argue the case until you have jurisdiction? So you just stick on jurisdiction.
Well, they
and when they violate it, when they push you to come back, okay, now it's conspiracy and they violated your unalienable rights. They're forcing you into a common law court under the threat of being ultimately the money or arrest.
Right.
And
it was
so
a warrant,
so now yeah. Now that's $25,000 to $50,000 for each violation of your unalienable rights for each person that you're going to put on that defendant's list. So I'd be looking for a lot of people to put on that defendant's list. I'd make sure I'd get the prosecutor on there, make sure I get the cop on there, make sure I get the judge on there. I probably would let the bailiff go. But if he looks at you funny, put him on there.
They don't even have a prosecutor or a bailiff in this initial hearing.
Right.
They just call an arraignment. So you don't even
know.
Well,
sometimes they'll have some sheriffs there or something, or you know, and they're all cued in for troublemakers like you, and
right.
They may, you know, you may get the sign from the judge, and then they'll come and they'll put their chest up against you. They'll intimidate you. You know, that'll happen once they realize that you go up against them. And so all those guys at that point have intimidated you, and you make that on the record. I feel threatened. I feel my life is in danger here on and for the record. These people have guns, and they're coming away. What's going on here, Judge? You know?
Yeah.
That's what you might, well, get it on the record. And then make sure you get their names and their badge numbers, because that's another three times $50,000 you put them on the defendant's list.
Hmm. You're talking about the bailiffs that are threatening
anybody,
you.
Any officer of that court that comes up and intimidates.
Right.
They will use these guys to intimidate. We see it often.
Yes, I've experienced that. I've been in jail a couple of times. It's been quite an educational experience.
Well, you got to get whoever's in charge of that jail, $50,000 on them. The people who've done your fingerprints, they participated in that conspiracy, $50,000 on them. And people who gave you your clothes, if they give you clothes for that day, those couple of days, every person you come in contact with, you got to get their name. You can write them up as a John Doe and pursue their names and demand their names. But put them on as John Doe's, and you're going to add up a whole bunch of people real quick on if you get arrested.
Well,
every person along the line.
You are a much more aggressive than I have been, but I've chalked this up to education, and that's been a good thing, and I'm still learning, obviously. I also wanted to comment on the...
One point about what you just said. If you read your Bible... The Bible tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and understanding, okay?
Yes.
Well, with these people, they're our servants, and let's turn that around a bit. The fear of the people is the beginning of their wisdom and understanding. If they don't fear you, they won't respect you, because they have they don't even have respect for themselves, so they're certainly not going to have respect for you. So when you go in that court, realize you're not getting no respect. You're going to demand respect through fear, and you'll be happy with that. And you got to make them fear. If you can get them to stutter, then you really got it going.
Well, when we were at this hearing, this lady judge, she really wanted to get us out of there. And we did send her a bill, because we had sent previously a notice of intent, a fee schedule. And so after the hearing, by way of the clerk, I did give her a bill. And so that was before I discovered your verified action here. So we've just sent that off today. For lack of personal jurisdiction. So hopefully...
Well, you know, that is a good idea, too. And let me suggest that to people, too. If you're going into court because you feel you have to be and you're threatened, and you bring up all the things that I just mentioned, before you leave the court, you should pass a bill to that judge. If it took you an hour of your time to get there and sit there and wait for your case you put down a minimum of 4 hours, because you're going to presume that's what it's going to be, and you charge them $200 an hour, because I that's what I make, and that's a deal. That's a deal. So you're getting a good price for me. And you write them up a bill for $800, and you give it to the court for wasting your time and bringing you into this, you know. And again, you know, then you're going to put that into your case and bill them for that $800 with interest.
And then you take that, obviously, to...
Also, if you wrote a paper, hey, lawyers charge $1,500 for the paper. I'll charge them $1,500 for that, too.
Really?
If you charge them $1,500 for the paper and you're taken into court, you don't want to hit the hours up, so just do a flat fee. You wrote a paper and you came to court. Someone's got to pay my bill.
Okay.
I had to put a lot of time into this. You people had no authority to bother me, and you're threatening me with jail. You're threatening me with fines, extortion, illegal incarceration, all kinds of stuff. So I had to come down here to straighten this out, and here's my bill. I expect can you write a check for me right now?
Actually,
why not try it? You know.
Our stuff was not in dollars. It was done in a silver coin or gold coin, because
That's a good point. Yes.
So it wasn't done in dollars. It was 44 units an hour, and that's supposed to be 99.9% silver. So, you know, the bill is rather. And there was no there wasn't even anyone. There was no witness. There was no affidavit. There's, you know, they don't have it. They have nothing. You know, so that they get charged for those things too. So,
well, you got a very good point, what you just said there, because, you know, when we go after the judges if we find a judge, we usually do a silver dollar. The last judge, we did 100 silver dollars, because we didn't want to play with the funny money. But you're right. When we write our cases up, if you're going to sue them for $50,000, go find out what the value of silver is at that point and interpret it into silver dollars. And that's what you should go after. $1,500 in silver dollars. or gold. But I do silver dollars because silver dollars are exactly that. There are silver dollars out there, and that's what you want. It's called junk silver. I think it's good to have because everybody understands it. But that's what you can ask for. But then you can also add 10% on that because 10% of that silver, is the 10%, it's only 90% silver. So you want to get that other 10% in there.
Well, we'll see how this goes. They set the pretrial hearing, and this thing I put in here at the last was that, and I had done a writ of error reference how the hearing had gone, as they call it, and that there was order to show cause why they violated the constitutionally protected rights. And I put some of that, freedom of speech, because she tried to shut me up and because I couldn't speak for my husband because I wasn't a licensed attorney. And it's like, oh, yeah, right, okay. I'm
Well, next time do that in the form of a mandamus. If you do a writ of error is very serious. You're not giving them any opportunity because you already made your decision. And at the end, you have to rescind them and then give the proper decision to replace their decision. And then you got to rescind the decision that the judge made. A writ of error is a direct order from the court. If you're going to tell them, well, you show cause why I shouldn't give you a writ of error or something like that, which you wouldn't want to do that, but show cause or something, you could do that in the form of a mandamus. Mandamus is sort of a show cause, and so is a quo vanto.
Okay, show cause, because I found that before I found this jurisdiction is barred verified action, so I kind of got the cart before the horse, but we'll see how this goes. And then essentially said that they had to show cause by way of sending their answer to my notary witness, who's my court of record person, public notary witness, and that we're not coming back to their silly hearing because obviously they've made an error and there's no personal jurisdiction. So we'll see how.
So
that
you got
goes.
A notary to run your court through?
Yes, I have.
Oh, that's good. That's hard to get. That's good that you worked that out.
Well, I've trained a couple of notaries pretty well and actually had them. She wrote up a certificate of default for no response in this particular case because I had sent earlier paperwork before I discovered yours. And that still didn't get him to dismiss it. So hopefully all this stuff will get this judge to come to her senses unless she wants to have us pursue the case otherwise. So
where did you learn the notary thing?
Well, I've been studying a lot of this stuff for over 5 years, and I know how important.
Do you have any research compiled?
I have lots of research, except they stole my computer when they tried to. When they evicted us, one of the three times they tried to evict us out of our house, and we're still in it by God's grace. So, I've learned a lot over the last 5.5 years. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, if you have anything that you could send us, we'd appreciate it on that. I don't have too much knowledge about it, but I've heard about it.
Well, it's fairly simple. You just contract with your notary, and they become your witness, and you have documents sent to them, and they can verify a non-response because you're an independent witness. So,
right, but then the response should be directed to the notary, addressed to some address the notary gives, and then okay, gotcha.
So you use that as your return address, it's pretty simple. It's just an independent third-party witness, and because a notary is an officer of the court and an officer of the state, and you want to be a private man or woman, you don't want to get into their public false fiction stuff, You keep yourself separate from it. That is like your protection, your go-between, so to speak. Plus, them being the officer of the court and officer of the state is very strong as well. So they can become your court officer, your magistrate, essentially. And
yes, that's what I heard, yeah.
They have as much power as any of these people on the bench.
Right, because they, to a sense they are a magistrate, and of course, all judges are magistrates, and that we even find that in the New York State Constitution. And all judges are magistrates. That's why we wrote on our paper magistrates/judges, or maybe we put it the other way around, because you see, they operate in two courts. They operate in the courts of equity, and they operate in courts of law. When they're in a court of law, they're a magistrate. When a court of equity is open, they're a judge. But they're not a chancellor, though. They're not a chancellor. There's a big difference. They act as chancellor in both, but go ahead.
Well, you're even in your law and jurisdiction, your memorandum that you have in there about magistrates, and it says that notaries are also act. There's one of the parts in there about notaries that are like conveyors of deeds and magistrates, that sort of thing. So most notaries don't even realize how strong a position they have.
Right,
and
they don't teach them.
They don't teach them that, but and I don't necessarily teach them really well either. I just, because I do up all the documents, and I just write it so that they can truthfully answer yes, you know, they can agree with what's written, and then once in a while I'll have another notary notarize their signature. So then you have, you know, double witnesses, so to speak. So it's not a complicated thing. It's just using that independent third party on your behalf for your court of record. It's just an extra strength, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. All right, well, if you got anything
John,
that you could send us. Yeah.
This is Tanner from Oklahoma. I'm sorry to butt in.
How you doing?
Can you hear
me? I was just going to move to the next caller anyway, so I think we're done, right?
We are, except I was going to be specific. I read the True Bill of Information, which is excellent, and just found a couple of spelling errors, and I can be very specific about them very quickly. And that is, I've done homeschooling with my children, so I've done a lot of
editing. Yeah, if you could say it here, you know, I'm going to mark the time so that I could just roll through and get it, so I don't have to write it down. But go ahead.
Page 6, in the second line, it says, said courts were ordained and established. You want to have established as past tense with ED, so it's consistent with ordained and established.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay.
All right.
And then on page 7, the very last word is offenses, and it's spelled O-F-F-E-N-C-E-S, and I would think it would be spelled with an S instead of a C in offenses.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. I'll take a look at that.
But blessings. I'm very excited about being part of this good thing and helped Nevada get fully constituted. And moving ahead, the Lord is going before us, and we have victory ahead.
Absolutely. I agree.
Thank you.
Okay. Who was the next person? Who's that gentleman? What's your name?
Tanner from Oklahoma.
How you doing, Tanner?
All right, man. I've been trying to get in, but my computer mic wasn't working, so I called you. And I'm sorry to butt in, but I'm looking at my case has developed even worse, and they're trying to put me in jail for a year over this text message to communicate for my daughter's sake. And mm-hmm. I've appealed it, and, of course, I had appealed to the judge, and he said no and didn't even listen to my attorney. They're all talking together. They got upset with me for standing by their office and listening and kept sending my lawyer out to pull me away from their
office. You're in family
office.
Court, right?
Yeah. Well, now I'm in criminal court because they're saying I violated a VPO that I wasn't notified about, which I was never proven to need for the last 2 years almost. So,
well, what you need to do is, I think, move it into federal court. I think you can start off with one of the things. You have to find your violation, your unalienable rights violation, which is protected by the Constitution. Right off the bat, due process comes to mind, so you can use that one. I mean, just bear in mind, you have a right to be a father, and nobody has that right to take it away from you. And clearly, whether you have money or not have money, if they're trying to say that since you don't have money, you can't see your child, they can go to hell. And
They passed a bill in Oklahoma that an unmarried father has zero rights to a child. And so I know, well, you know what?
An unlawful law is no law at all. And it's as if
right.
It has never passed. It's irrelevant. Whoever created that idea, first of all, why do I need their marriage license in order to be a father or even to be married? Maybe you're common law married. Now, I don't think you can prove. Well, you know what? Ultimately, did you make any commitment verbally to the woman you were with, and where is she standing in all this?
We were engaged, and I caught her running around 4 weeks into my daughter being alive. And then
we'll just leave it there. That's fine. Look, at the only reason for a divorce ultimately, and you know, when you go into the Bible, it's all ceremonial. You don't get a license, you don't get a permit, you don't get a piece of paper. You know, it's just before the Lord, and that's it. So now, you know, if you go study the Bible, you'll discover that, for instance, you have a right to write a letter of divorcement for the purpose of fornication. okay? And it means you could break the engagement. The fact that God called it fornication, you see, when you get engaged, you're committed, and you're in the process of marriage. You can't break out of that at that point. You've got the commitment going forward. And God says up until the point of consummation, you know, which is really you have the feast and then the consummation, which is the marriage feast, then you're married, and then there's even for fornication, there is no fornication. It would be adultery, and even for adultery, you can't get out of your marriage. You know, you're in it till, you know, death do us part. But God does give us an out during that time period of commitment for the purpose of fornication. So with that in mind, okay, this is a biblical principle. And so the point is that you were engaged, you had a child, and it's my child, and it's none of your business, Judge. And I wouldn't put it to them that way, but it isn't any of their business. Now, why can't you see your child?
Well, I've made lots of mistakes. I know why I've gotten myself into this, but I have three children, two from a previous marriage and one from this. I can see my child, but barely at all. I have to go to Sheriff's Exchange to protect myself
why?
From their lies because they claimed I had no right. What happened was she did emergency. I'll just do it real quick. She did.
Okay.
I called her out.
I don't need to hear no more, because the bottom line is, as long as that's your child, you have a right, and that child has a right to have a father and a mother, and no mother should get in the way of that, and a father shouldn't get in the way with the other side, and it's a 50-50 basis. If you can't work it out, it's a 50. You know, if you separate. It's a 50-50 basis. You share 50-50 of that child. Now, one might say, hey, you know, I'm working and I can't do it. And the other one say, well, I can do it. I could do it 60% or 70%. You could do 30 or 40%. Well, that's fine. You know, but the bottom line, as long as you agree to it, you know, that's fine. And when things change, you know, you can get more time. The point is you need to be able to get 50% of the time with your children. And for those people who are divorced or separated or whatever, and there's children involved, for the child's sake, you should spend some time with your ex and that child in a family-type unit, even though you're not together, for that child's sake. Because, you know, the violation is on the child to begin with, you know.
Right.
In my life, the idea of divorce just doesn't even come to mind. It's, no matter what problems we have, it just, and my wife's the same way, so... You know, we have to just suffer each other, you know.
Well, I've suffered many, many worse consequences from not doing that, I guarantee that. But let me run this through real quick. One thing I ask, if I could have permission to send a link to this audio for the Father's Rights Movement, but it's up to you, and you can tell me either way. But
yeah, what you want to do, I don't care.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get them on board and say, this is how we change it, not yelling at people.
Right.
But anyways...
Yeah, it's up on. It'll be up on the internet tonight, and they just run a link here, and that's fine. And they'll see what we're doing, hopefully, and they'll get on board with us.
Absolutely, that's what I'm working on. So here's the deal. The problem is they did the emergency exporte order, so I couldn't talk to my child. I couldn't see my baby. I couldn't talk to her. I couldn't know what she's doing.
Word. An emergency exporte. What does that mean?
An ex parte order, and
the
E with a little.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
I know what
basically. Yeah, the judge appeared to be on the media.
That sounds pretty screwed up as an ex parte order. I mean, who are these people?
There's no due process, right? There's been
you got to go right to federal court. Take this whole thing to federal court.
I appealed again, though. So now what do I do? Because I've got to catch up quick, or else they're going to put me away.
Well, I don't know how long you've been with us? Have you been paying attention? You know, how long have you been with NLA?
It was back, it's been about a month and a half, 2 months, and I've been catching up reading. I'm doing the Oklahoma deal. I took it from,
Right, well, you got to go in, you got to do the Bill Thornton tapes. There's four lectures from him. It's all under essays and common law. And you have to do, Carl, what's his last name? Carl, what's Carl's last name? Anybody remember? He's on
it's
the,
on there, though, under essays.
Yeah, he's on the common law page. What's his last name?
Carl Miller.
Miller. Carl Miller. Okay.
Right.
he's very good to watch what he's got to do, what talk about. You got to read the cases. You know, we put up a lot of example cases. Read those cases. You read the cases we're writing, and between all that together collectively, you'll come to an appreciation. But the key thing is when you go to move into a federal court, you know, if you don't have any background, it's difficult for you to do. If you get a lawyer, you lose. You know?
I'm dumping my lawyer if I'm going to go this route, and I'm going to do the crazy thing and take it to the appeal to the federal court. And
You're not appealing anything, because in common law there is no appeal. You open your common law court and you start it fresh, even though you bring everything in. You are the plaintiff now, and and they are the defendants, and they have assaulted you, and they violated your unalienable rights, and you have to go into the Bill of Rights and show where they violated your unalienable rights. You know, there's nothing more holy than the right to be a father or a mother. There's nothing,
absolutely,
nothing more holy than that. They cannot violate that. God gave you that child. He didn't give the judge the child. The judge has nothing to do with anything or anything. Just get out of my face to the judge, is my opinion. But you know, any judge, any magistrate, because he's supposed to be a magistrate, well, look, they're not even supposed to be making decisions. But, you know, they give them, family court is different. It shouldn't be set up, there shouldn't be a lawyer allowed in family court to begin with. So that eliminates the judges. It should be a panel of a couple of people sitting down there trying to work out the problems within the family. And if they can't work it out themselves, then they work it out for them. And it's very simple, because it's always the same thing. It's always the same answer. There's nothing magical. There's nothing. You don't have to spend a year trying to study to figure out what needs to be done, unless there's abuse there. You don't have to figure nothing out. It's very simple. The child deserves a mother and a father. And they both get 50%, because there's nothing more fairer than that. That's it, period.
Absolutely.
Nothing else to talk about. And and again, in most cases, the father will probably say, I can only do 20 or 30% because they're the breadwinner. And but the mother's out there working too. So, but then you can joint, get a babysitter that you both agree with, or some kind of a thing, and work something out, and do something. You know, you can always get a family that's homeschooling and try to work out a deal with them. You've given them a few bucks for your child to homeschool with their children, and this way you keep them out of the school systems, because that's going to destroy them. Everyone comes out of the school system these days is just an absolute certified moron or idiot. It's that bad.
Right.
I mean, they don't even know who the first president, who George Washington was.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, here's the problem. The twofold problem is that once it went out of the custody court into the criminal, now they're saying they have a victim, but somehow in there in the mix, I was never proven. They're saying that I sent her a text message while I was under the VPO, and they didn't notify me.
What was the text message?
I'm willing to speak on our daughter's behalf. She doesn't deserve to suffer because of us. Let me know.
So did you tell them that was your text message? And who says I can't talk to my ex-daughter?
The DA had her read that out loud to the judge. And then they gave me 5 years of probation. They gave me 52 weeks.
Oh, these people are insane. Go to federal court. Sue these SOBs. They're insane.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to week in jail. But what happened was I went to the wrong county, because I live an hour away from where I have to drive to court. I have to drive an hour each way. And then now they're giving me a year.
Bear in mind this, okay? The cavalry is coming. I mean, either America is going to fall before we get there, or we'll be there and we're going to do it. So the cavalry is coming. And you'll be able to bring your case to the grand jury. And believe me, family court's going to be shut down. That cannot be. That's a wrongdoing altogether, no matter how you put it. You know,
John, they're forcing divorces. When the police come and file ex parte orders against the child,
they put people
and they
in jail. I know all about it.
They make it to where people that want to be together can't contact each other.
I know. Believe me, we had a case. Believe me, I know. It is so seriously defunct, and it's all about money. It's all about money. And they got, how can a family be run by lawyers? You know, look at our country. It's run by lawyers. You know what I mean?
And DHS and
look at the court run by lawyers. How could a family be run by lawyers? How can you give a child a lawyer and the two parents are lawyers? And
yeah, it's disgusting.
It's dumb.
So what should I file, though? What do you recommend to file on these deals? I mean, I'm going to read it, but I have a limited amount of time.
Well, look, it's tough if you don't know what to do. I mean, I can't do anything for you. I can only give you some thoughts and ideas and refer you to places. But, you know, studying is the key thing. No matter what, study. You have to take your whole case and be able to write a case. And you have to know how to write first of all, you have to know how to open a court of record. Now, opening a court of record is very simple. Bill Thornton makes it very simple. So you can start there, of course. Bill Thornton, I think, is primary. We have a book we wrote on court access and the anatomy of a court cases, but it's a lot of the procedural stuff of their courts. But nevertheless, you need to know it. At least now you do. Later on, you won't. So you have some really heavy duty studying to do before you'll be able to be in a position. When are they expecting to bring you back to court?
My son's birthday, October 6th.
Okay, so you got some time. So you could be studying and be really working hard on this and file the papers before that. You have to file before that. You have to file a paper. Here's the key thing. You have to write an affidavit, okay? And that affidavit has to be everything. You have to pour your heart in there, be honest, and be as specific as you can and get as much in there. You should keep a log, pain and suffering, all that stuff.
Right.
And the fact
before.
That they're keeping you from your child, you make the point, you're not a perfect human being, but neither is she, neither are you, by the way, you be honest and get everything in an affidavit. You see, affidavit wins. Affidavit gives subject matter jurisdiction. An affidavit unrebutted, and trust me, they will not rebut it, stands as truth in a court of law, period. So you win right off the affidavit. Now you want to write your case, and your case really tells your story. It's a matter of facts. But there's a framework. If you go up and read the cases that we have, it's very simple, very short. There's a framework. You follow the framework. A framework talks about jurisdiction. It talks about the common law court that you're coming in as a court of record. And it refers to memorandums. You'll find the memorandums, all the memorandums you need up there. Okay, you use the memorandums. You see the court of the law of the case. It's already written. You just bring it in. You have to fill in your name and information.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell your sue all the people, and you write down what violations they've done. Now, when you're moving into a federal court, you have to show that they have the jurisdiction. So you get to the place where it talks about jurisdiction. That's where you have to talk about why they have jurisdiction. First of all, it was a conspiracy. You have been hijacked into a foreign court, and a judge has made decisions and said that is violated the most holy thing between human beings, which is a relationship between a father and a child. And so that really right there is the beginning. They violated your due process. You were not in a court of law. You were in an nisi prius, what do they had, chancery court.
What is the nisi prius? That stands for chancery? Because I read about that.
Nisi prius is ultimately a statutory court. One that precedes according to statutes. So it's a nisi prius court. It's a court not of record is another way of saying it. Chancery court is when you have a king ruling over. And the king could decide today,
the sky is green,
he can ordain it green, and tomorrow he can make it pink, even if it's blue.
There's nothing but a chancery.
The chancellor is in the chancery court. They're operating as a king, and they're a tyrant king. They're all tyrants, is what they are.
Absolutely. So I open the court of record by doing an affidavit with all the specific details.
You open a court of record by writing the paper in the proper form. You can see examples. We have examples.
Right.
But you got to listen to Thornton's tapes. You know, he's about 30, 40 hours of tapes. Listen to them.
Goodness.
Put them on. You become a zombie. You're riding in a car, playing them. You're in shopping, sticking your earbuds, you're doing something mindless, put them on. You're out swimming or maybe exercising, turn on the tapes. Anytime you're doing anything mindless, turn on Thornton. And listen to him all the way through, and then go back and begin all over again. I went through Thornton at least three, four times. And then I went back from time to time for referencing. And that's the way to get through his tapes. Now, he's not perfect. You know, he's made some errors in there. We discovered them later, and that's okay. But he's the guy. He's really the expert on the process. There's no doubt about it. And we've taken a few different turns that he has. You know, his stuff works, and I think Wash stuff works better.
So Bill Thornton tapes. They always show me how to open the court record and do the affidavit and look at the examples. And then he said, establish the jurisdiction by telling
them. Right. He's going to tell you when you get into a court. He's going to tell you when you get into a court, object, because everything they're doing is illegal. Object to everything. Now, because even in a federal court, once you get into a federal court and you call for a conference, you object. I object to this whole process. This is not going according to the common law. In common law, there is no conferences, you know. All this is a, you're not going to tell the judge this, but all this is a way for lawyers to make money. That's all it is. It's the favor of the judge to make money.
So
they charge their clients $1,500 to $2,500 bucks, huh?
Say that again, 15 what?
Yeah, so the lawyers can charge their clients $1,500 to $2,500 bucks. You know, every
right,
time they
right.
go to court, they write a paper and all other stuff. They don't really, well, I don't know what they charge in family court, but they seem to be there all the time, you know, every month at least. And it just goes on. It's an endless babble. It's just babbling. It's a waste of time and a destruction of families. You know, they're
remember,
not there families together.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, when you start talking about the principles, it's limitless when it comes to family court. So, but the memorandums, that's the references back to the proper law, the common law, natural law.
Right. There are two courts: is the court of law and a court of equity. And you're in a court of law side, and the court of equity has gone rogue. And you know, the paperwork that we have, I don't know if we have the latest. Well, I'm working on one, and I never got to finish it, and I got to get back to finishing it because I've got too many other things to do. But I will get back, and I'll update that one. But right now, that one, that's good. It's good. The other one's just more powerful than I'm working on. But it's the two courts, and you want to make it clear what court you're in. I'm in a court of record. I am in the common law court. So when you reference in your main body of paperwork, you want to keep your body of paperwork clean. You want to be on the point. All your details and everything are facts is in your affidavit, and you reference your affidavit in your action. You call it an action, not a complaint, okay? And then the framework, you'll be taught by thought, and then you'll also look at our framework. We've written some boilerplate frameworks, so you could just run right through it. You come to jurisdiction, okay. You're going into a federal court. Remember, you know, the federal court has to have a reason to hear you. You have to show them. That they may have the jurisdiction, but if you're not clear, they're not going to hear it. And I always refer to Article 3, judicial power, in Section 2, where it says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution and under the laws of the United States. So right there is your in, because they have violated your unalienable rights protected by the Constitution, and there's your connection. Okay, that's okay. Why this is a federal offense. Every court case, from my perspective at this point, I've come to understand, is a federal case. I'm going to make a federal case out of everything, even a parking federal
so
case.
So what? I've got to go. I mean, they literally, you can walk around. They handcuffed me last time and took me right down a hallway, and I was in the county courthouse. I was in the county jail.
Right, and you got to pay you
there,
for
so.
That. How long
so
were you incarcerated?
Well, I have to do those weekends. I don't know if you remember, but
well, that's
I
right.
Those
I remember
weekends.
This conversation with you. Yeah, those weekends, you add up those days because this is what I do, okay? Everyone in that court that put you into that position and had you incarcerated needs to spend 10 to 20 days for every day you spend in jail. That's number one.
Right.
Number
right.
two, I think a day in jail is worth 50 grand, okay? You can't push too much. I mean, you got a lot of days. You get to a point, the numbers get too astronomical. So you got to be reasonable to some point. But I think it's worth 50,000. Definitely worth 25,000. Heck, you know, incarceration by principle. In other words, the fact that you got to go to court, that in itself is worth $25,000 every time I have to go to court. You know, and
right.
Because I'm forced to go there. You know.
But how do
I?
How do I? Right, and I mean, I'm in jail everywhere I go because I'm afraid she's going to come within a certain amount of feet of me, and they're following me and all that. But anyways, I don't want to go to jail the day that I go in on October 6th.
They're intimidating you too, yeah.
I've got all these VPOs. They're following me. They're following my phone on GPS. They were going to do an ankle monitor. I mean, they requested everything. It didn't all go through, but just out of control. So if I go into court in this really, really small town, absolutely corrupt court where everyone just is just happy to screw everyone, when I go in there, I've been talking to those sheriffs. I'm not so sure that the bailiff is going to do anything about it. They're just like, yeah, whatever, bring us the books. So some of them secretly agree.
When you
with
go
me.
In where? When you go in where?
Well, I got to go to Canadian County, which is the small town court, to then move it to the federal court.
I wouldn't even bother with that anymore. At your point, I would at this point, and I would write that. Make sure you get that in your affidavit that you couldn't go to the court to file the necessary papers first off before moving it to the court. So you're just moving it over. Look, all you got to do is file a paper moving it over to the federal court. Well, no, forget about that. Don't even move it to the federal court. Just file a case against everybody and sue them directly in the federal court. And, you know, there's U.S. Code 42 and under 18, there's numerous codes in there that you can use, and you'll see that all over the website.
You're saying do this before I go in, before they're facing the year jail.
Yeah, you want to get into federal court before October.
Okay.
You want to really press yourself for this month of August and maybe a week or two of September at most. You need to be qualified at that point to write your paper and get in if possible, 30 days before you have to go. And you need an order of protection against all these monsters. Okay, you demand an order of protection against these people, including the sheriff, if the sheriff is a problem.
I thought about that. I was like, I should file an ex parte order against them. They're stalking me.
Well, first of all, is this the sheriff or town police?
Well, in the beginning, when it first happened, they had the sheriff coming by every day, checking on me, talking to me, and then I saw my local police driving by two squad cars once or twice a day, and I called them, and then they finally kind of quit doing that. But I, you know, my phone starts acting up, and I've done some research.
Well, the corporate police have no authority whatsoever, no real authority. They make arrests; it's a citizen's arrest. It doesn't matter because they're not the real police force. So you can go after them. They don't have the authority or the right to do anything to you. The sheriff is a different story now. Now he's violated his rights. He's violated the Constitution, his oath, and I would go after him for that. He participated.
Well, he testified to say that he served me the original papers a year and a half ago, but they were saying that that was enough notice for a renewal of some of these temporary. I mean, it's been going on for years. I've been under these VPOs without one shred of evidence.
Well, due process right there. No subject matter jurisdiction. Look at you.
Right.
If you notice anything that comes into those stupid courts, they'll be at the bottom of it. I swear that this is true and all of this stuff, and they sign it. It's meaningless. It doesn't have any power. Nothing because there's
they
no
have
notice.
They've got the repercussions of what happens if you lie right on the paper, but they never, ever enforce the perjury.
No, but the point is it's not a sworn statement because there is no notary at the bottom of that. When a cop writes a paper and it's a sworn statement, there's no notary. It's relevant. It's worthless. Use it for kindling.
They told me that I couldn't use police reports that exonerated all these investigations from DHS on me because it would be hearsay, and that's exactly why.
Well, there you go. You know, they play both sides of the road. They understand, don't they?
They do. They know exactly what
they're doing. Now they're guilty. They're guilty in their soul, too, now. They just proved it.
So I have to, the paperwork and everything like that. Now, do I have to be some kind of verbal ninja on this karma law stuff, or can I just use common sense and be like, look, I know the Constitution. I don't know how you want me to say it, but this is what I need.
Look at it. It is all common sense once you get the main points. You need to get the overall picture. You need the framework. You need to get familiar with all this stuff. So, and that helps your belief system in what you're doing also. So you have to have an overall appreciation for the common law and understanding how the court process works. But generally speaking, yeah, this is really simple stuff. Anybody listening for a long period of time will realize I just keep repeating myself. It's the same. It's very simple. It really is.
Right. I've heard a lot of
that. But it takes a little while before you realize it. You know, just coming in from different directions, it's the same. The boilerplate we have up there works for everything. You know?
Yeah, and I guess that's where I was getting confused, is the difference between, like, where there is no victim or where there's claiming a victim. So now I'm in criminal court, and they're saying there's a victim.
There's got to be an injured party. The injured party has to do a sworn affidavit. No sworn affidavit, there is no injured party. That's why even for a for instance, get a search warrant, there has to be a sworn affidavit for it. There has to be someone swearing that they know something's going on and that this is what's happening for them. And then the search warrant tells not only the address but the very specific place they're looking, like in the third drawer in the bedroom, the back bedroom, you know, that kind of thing. And
well, they're using the text messages and stuff like that, and she's saying that she was scared, and you know what I mean. So how does that play in? She calls the DA constantly to make sure I go to jail, and they're doing whatever she wants.
That's terrible.
Right. Well, you know, you need to get that on to the paper, and you got to make everything clear.
Because, they have to prove it, right?
I don't want to tell you to sue her, but, you know, on the one hand, you probably should add her to the lawsuit. On the other hand, you don't want to cause her any more grief and more distress that there's more friction between you. But if you can add her on and then forgive her at the end, you know, because you're really not here for that intention.
I pray every day about that deal.
So, but the point is you're going to have to pray for wisdom on how to handle that one. You know, maybe not putting her on and letting her know you didn't put her on, because look at you. You know, you got my child and we got to fix this. You got to
stop I'm more concerned about her being the victim in their eyes. So it's not like there's no victim, there's no crime. They're saying there is a victim. That's what I mean. Like, I don't want
to
get stuck.
But if there is no injury, if you're not injuring her, you know, then there is nothing. You know,
right.
I hope that you keep your cool when you talk, and you're not allowed to talk to her anyway. I mean, that's ridiculous. This whole thing's ridiculous. Look at all these people need to go to jail.
Absolutely.
That's really the bottom line.
Absolutely. They need to sit in there for a long time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on. Anything else to really finish it off, or are we pretty much done?
No, I'm going to get started, and hopefully my questions are more fine-tuned as I learn some more of this, and I appreciate your time.
And remember, you can always come back and listen to the tapes, and you were on before. You can listen to some of those tapes. You know, they're all up there. I don't remember. You might have been on today, but no, I think you were on a Saturday, weren't you?
I was on every. I've never been on
what
a Saturday.
I keep saying Saturday for Thursday. I mean Thursday.
Yeah, no, I've been
on Wednesday a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I've been on whatever I can.
All right, so you know, you should try to find those areas in the tape and kind of roll them, play them through a couple of times, make some notes and specifics, and that's how you'll be able to, you know, because I've given you a lot of information. And that getting familiarized with, you know, Thornton and Miller and other things, you know, and there's a lot of other things you need to get into. I'll tell you what I'm finding real fascinating, I've been really focusing in on, is the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist Papers. You know, before you do them, though, you want to read the Constitution a couple of times, and you want to read through it very carefully and see how you can appreciate it as best you can at the time, and then listen to the debates and pay very close attention to when they quote a particular part that they think should be in the Constitution, and then you'll maybe even freeze it. You know, I kind of know, generally speaking, but sometimes I got to freeze it too, to look to see what they're talking about and how it actually ended up. Because they're making a case on really constructing the Constitution. That's what it's all about. They're debating, you know, the words and the wording and what goes where and what should be in there, what shouldn't be in there. You know, so it's really right. It's a fascinating conversation when you really get attuned to it. Sometimes it's a little over your head, but when you get the framework by reading the Constitution numerous times before listening, you get the idea and the gist of things. Now you got the framework. You got now a framework to work off of, and then you can listen to this conversation and especially in places where it applies to what's going on in your life.
Right. Right. Well, I definitely appreciate it. I listened to the first part of the Federalist or the Anti-Federalist, I can't remember which one, and they pretty much described exactly where we're at today as a fear of what would happen with the federal government. I mean, to a T, exactly to a T.
They do a perfect job. All the problems, all we had to have done was listen to our parents. If we would have listened to our parents, we wouldn't be in this mess. Isn't that the same story over and over and over again? You know, our children, when they don't listen to us, they get themselves in trouble. Well, we didn't listen to our parents, our founding fathers. We're getting ourselves in trouble. And ultimately, we didn't listen to our real parent, God Almighty. You know, we're getting ourselves in trouble. We just have to learn to listen better.
Right.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's move on. Before I go on, give me a second. Gerard, are you here? Gerard, are you still here? Let me see if I see him on the phone. I got to wake him up. It looks like he's still here. Gerard. All right, what I want to do is I want to walk away from my mic for a minute. I got to go get a bottle of water before I be unable to talk at all. Why don't people just talk? I'll be back in a few minutes, okay? I don't want to leave it silent, so if someone has something to say, they could talk to someone else, get a little conversation. 1 minute.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Who is it again here that was discussing the
Hello?
The traffic? Hello?
I don't know if I'm muted or not.
We can hear you.
You're not muted.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Everybody is not muted.
Well, a lot of us muted ourselves, so you almost have to check.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I was muted.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me, anyone?
Yes.
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 I just wanted to say quickly that, you know, I can relate to the man that was just talking about the family court situation.
All right, I'm back.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I wanted to relate to the man that was just on talking about the family court situation because my whole thing is, one of the cases, I got about five different lawsuits. And I'm going to do one at a time because it's just so overwhelming. But my situation was it was no due process. It was all intimidation. It was threat to arrest and coercion. It was conspiracy. And when they kidnapped my children, I never saw them again. And
we spoke before, haven't we?
Yes,
you and I have spoke. Yeah, who is it?
Yeah, this is Gina in Monmouth County in New Jersey.
Okay. Yep. Yep, I remember
and,
we spoke. Yep.
So I went everywhere, and you know, I would never have believed that the whole system was corrupt if I didn't personally experience going from, you know, this one to the next level to the next level, and everybody working together against you, and nobody's trying to hear or get to the bottom of it, you know. So my thing is, when the guy was talking about the affidavits, and you told him that you know you put everything in it, I wanted to make sure that. Does that mean the defendants also, or do they go into the actual case?
Yeah, hang on 1 second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody. Now hit *6 to talk because we had too much background noise. Go back and ask that question again. *6 to talk and then ask your question.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead. We got you.
Okay, as far as the affidavit, you said put everything in it because every time somebody did something, I documented the time, if I can get a name without being, you know, just totally...
Right. You want to make your affidavit as much information as you can remember or, you know, you get in there. Because detail, you know, the truth is in the detail. Proof is in the pudding. And the bigger your story is, you know, if you were lying, there'll start to be inconsistencies there. So if you're telling the truth, you'll find consistency. So that's why bigger the affidavit, the better it is. Also, once you get into a court and you're getting involved in the process itself, if it had to go before a jury, you know, they're really hearing what is already on the paper. It's hard to get something else into the system, into the court later on. But although it can get in, but it's difficult.
Yeah, because I have everything documented, and people would always tell me, I'm not reading all this, it's too much. But I said, well, this is everything that happened.
Who tells you that?
I went to this lawyer, and he told me, I'm not reading all this. This is too much to read.
That was your first mistake. You went to a lawyer.
Yes, exactly. Right. I didn't know.
You should have walked out immediately then if the guy don't have time to read your papers, because what you got is a lot of evidence. And he doesn't recognize evidence, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care whether he wants a simple case. He doesn't care whether you win or lose. There's no compassion there. I mean, I'm sure there is a lawyer with compassion. I just haven't found him yet. But nevertheless, it's all about money.
$100,000.
Huh?
They wanted $100,000 or more to do the case.
They're insane.
I have evidence. I have the evidence. Well, I shouldn't need one dime. And they were just playing games back and forth, and it went on for years and years. So my main thing was to stay alive. I said, well, I got to stay alive to save my children so they'll know the truth, because they've been brainwashed beyond ridiculousness.
Right. Are your children grown now?
Well, my daughter, she's 24. She was taken kidnapped when she was 5 years old. I found her.
Do you have any relationship with her?
I tried to get one, but she's so brainwashed against me. I found her 15 years later on Facebook, and, you know, we tried to have, you know, things going on, but the people who have her, they know what they did. So they had to continue to have me look like I was the bad guy and right. You know.
Well, I went to do some, years ago, my wife and I, we went to become foster parents, and when we went in, you know, at that point, I was already a Christian. My wife was a Christian, you know, and so we were Christ focused, and we went in with the intention of being able to help people, help children, and we looked at it from a foster care parent's perspective. My parents took in foster children also, and when my mother did is she became friends with the parents of the children. Okay, that's what I intended on doing. Mm-hmm. Boy, they were dead set about anything, dead set against anything, because I thought maybe I'd be able to help the parents get back a relationship with their children, because they're in the foster care system. They're not up for adoption, you know? And,
they separated my two boys.
Well, you're right.
They kidnapped them when they were 4 and 5. Then they separated my two boys. And my husband and I, we haven't seen them since 2003. We haven't heard from them or seen them.
Wow. Well, you're right. And the system is set up. When we went in on our time, my parents were doing it, was a different time period too. But anyway, when we went in to do it, and we started talking to people, you know, because you had to go through these classes, and all the people in the classes are people coming to become qualified to be foster parents. And there were probably, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 couples, you know, ourselves included. And the whole conversation, these people were constantly just dogging about how terrible these parents are to these children that they're there to save. And you know, our position was quite different. You know, it was like they were brainwashed. They're coming in with the idea that the parents of the children that they're coming to save are evil. And it was very difficult. And I tried to even change the people who were running this class, their whole perspective on what they're doing, because they allowed this kind of conversation. That's negative. That's not going to do anything. So that whole system is destroyed right there. It's defunct from the beginning. Oh, so you're right. These parents that are taking these people that become the parents to your children, quote unquote, and they really maybe never do sometimes, but usually they don't, because you see, you know, often it's my stepchild, you know, and that's what happens, and that's a problem too. You know, my parents didn't do that. They never called any of our brothers and sisters stepchildren. I never thought about it that way either. You know, anyway, We have some that have adopted. We were adopted in my family. And we never thought of each other in any other way other than a brother or a sister. But the bottom line is they create a destruction of any family unit, and they destroy the children, and they turn the people who are taking these children in against the parents, and that's reflected even to the child that they're taking care of. And it's just a mess. The whole system is a mess. Then you get into the family courts, which I've had experience now over the past few years, and it's a horror story.
Yeah, and what they do is they'll send a worker out, and they don't have no court order or nothing. They intimidate you that way. And then if that worker writes, well, there's nothing wrong, the child is well taken care of, love, whatever, they'll replace that with someone that will come in and write something totally bogus, totally untrue. You know, like when I talked about what they did, everything they did, they did at gunpoint.
Yeah.
And it was just terrible. But I'm going to put all that in the affidavit. And it's going to tell everything from head to toe. Detail, times, dates, everything.
Mm-hmm. Hi. I just want to break in for a second. Lydia Reading from New York. Everything you're saying is true. I watched it happen in Jersey in front of me. It was horrifying. And the purpose of the foster care system is black market adoptions. That's
well,
what it
human
is.
Trafficking.
It was the most horrific thing I've ever seen, particularly if I watched it happen with a friend of mine who had it was horrible. The purpose of the foster care system is just to get children into a system so you can pay for black market adoptions. That's
right.
All it is. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I just
yeah,
also
to, all the lawyers involved, they're making money, the social workers, the whole system. It's a money-making machine.
All under the table. It's all graft. It's the most sickening thing. You don't have to see the money go into the pocket. You just watch these people behavior, and it's the most sickening thing. That's all I wanted to say. You're absolutely right. It was sickening. I'm gonna mute myself now.
Yeah, because I have been there and showed them actual evidence in different cases, this case and other cases, and they came back with guilty verdicts. I mean, how can you The evidence, the truth is right in your face, and you don't see the truth. I mean, the conspiracy, the RICO, is beyond your imagination.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This
pretty,
is
pretty for that for all these years, you know, because I have to break the lie. My whole life was a lie, and now my children are living a lie, and I had to stay strong. And what kept me strong was the Most High's power and the Book of Job. You know, when everything was taken
right.
from him, and the same thing happened to me, and I had to scratch my way through, claw my way to where I'm at right now, and, you know, watch my back every second of every hour.
Right. Yeah, if anybody thinks they have problems, go read the Book of Job. You're absolutely right. Go ahead, Tanner.
I just want to insert something real quick. Yes, I read Job and Joseph a lot right now. Something to maybe research, because fundamentally that's how I found you guys, through the Father's Rights Movement, through going through this. So whatever God's going to do with the good, so be it. But the attack on the family system and the role of the father, especially, but also mothers and everyone, the whole family unit, that is, to me, one of the most important priorities of what we're doing. Because if you destroy the family, then these kids are the state's, and the state raises them at their will. But Social Security Act Title IV, I think Section D starts getting into the family court. There's incentive payments to the states. In fact, Oklahoma just passed a bill. It was kind of hidden on their website. I accidentally found it looking for other things. They said it was about debit cards, but when you look it up, it's all the same stuff. They were going to threaten 5% TANF funding to Oklahoma if they did not put this stuff into place. So they withhold money from the state, and it causes all this controversy to the public, which they don't really understand what's really happening. So they take the money, but there's matching funds for child support issued, child support collected, the efficiencies of this stuff through DHS, child support enforcement. They all this money that funds toward the fathers to track them down, to collect his child support, to do all these things, and then they have all these battery things that they support too, all these classes, and then, of course, all the judges have investments in these battery classes, things like that. But Social Security Act Title 40, it's very ambiguous to the actual dollar amounts that end up happening. But it also, ironically, funds the jail system, food stamps, all the welfare stuff,
child support, all of it is in the same deal. So the whole system, no matter where they place the father or the mother or their estranged parent, in any part of that system, they're all making money. So the more I go to jail, the more classes I have to take. Whoever is the loser is going to make everybody a ton of money. And then even on the governor level, if they don't enact these deals, then they lose money to the state. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Maybe it would help with some of our research.
Let me tell you something. I'm a feminist. I'm Lydia Radin again from New York. So I'm a diehard feminist, and it is the most disgusting thing to fathers I've ever seen. I have friends who are part of my tennis association out in Newark. When they were getting divorced, they had to register with the police department, fingerprints, photographs, as if they were convicted felons. They had done nothing but get a divorce. It was the most insane. I had to go and do a campaign with a divorced father because he was treated like a convicted felon. He had done nothing. It was the most insulting thing. Let me tell you something. From a diehard feminist, we went way in the wrong direction, and we need to come back. It was sickening. And every man out there deserves an apology, every feminist out there, because we have really done a lot of men wrong.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
All right, let's move on to another caller, maybe. Someone else wants to pipe in? Question, comment?
Yeah. I got a family law case, too. It's a CPS case. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I'm a grandmother, and I live in Florida, but the case is in Michigan. And they took my grandchildren. I've been fighting this for years, trying to get those kids out of Michigan, get them down here to Florida. I filed through the courts for guardianship, got the attorney. The circuit court denied my guardianship and committed the kids to what they call the Michigan Children's Institute, where the guy adopts them out. I appealed the guardianship and filed for adoption as well. And, they denied the adoption.
We lost you. They denied the adoption. Can anyone hear me? Maybe. We can hear you now. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yep, we hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I don't know where I was cut off at, but anyway.
Well, they denied you, but go ahead.
They denied my guardianship. They denied the adoption. They were committed to the MCI. I appealed the guardianship and the adoption, and then it went to the appeals court, and I won in the appeals court for the guardianship, and they declared the adoption then moot, and that was last summer in August, and I picked up the kids, and I had them for a few days, and they got a stay, and they took me to the Michigan Supreme Court.
Who did this now? Who got the stay?
DHS, the state.
They just don't let you alone? I mean, I can see if the people who were taking care of the children might do something, and you can say, well, maybe, you can kind of feel for them, not that they have a right or authority to do it, but for the state to come back after you get the children back into a family, that's insane.
Yeah, the state did that, and, the foster
and
parents...
And I'm surprised you got that far. I can tell you, I ran into this situation myself about 20 years ago where my sister lost two of her young children, and she was in another state, and I was trying to get to take the children in myself because, we're family, and they wouldn't even entertain it in any way, shape, or form. I didn't have any knowledge back then to deal with it, so I, was unable to do anything with it. But anyway, it's an interesting story. So they went around and they now you got another case that came up. They got a stay or something. Go ahead. What happened?
The Supreme Court ruled against my guardianship. They said I only had 30 days to get them out of Michigan, to asked for guardianship, and I didn't do it in the first 30 days.
Seriously. Go ahead.
So I didn't qualify. So and they remanded it back to the Court of Appeals to decide the adoption issue, which nobody wins that in Michigan. I haven't heard of anybody winning it. And, you know, but I haven't gotten that. They haven't even given me a date yet. So for that.
Well, you have a story for the grand jury when they come into power. You know, and this is another horror story. So now, how old are the children now?
The oldest is 12. There's four kids. So he's going to be 13 next month, you know, uh-huh. And then.
Are they all in the same household?
They are all in the same household, and they do want to adopt them. Uh-huh. You know, they didn't bring any legal action because they had the state doing it for them. They never had to,
and they have no authority anyway. It's not their children. I mean, they got they're good-hearted people maybe and everything else, but look at it, it's not their children.
Right, and well, they've been fighting to keep the kids away from us, you know. Anyway, and they've not been good to our family. I gotta say, I mean. You know, I'm sure that they meant well taking kids in. I don't want to sit here and dog the foster parents, but, you know, right. I'd get my calls and I could hear him in the background saying, you still want to talk to her? You know, I have the caseworker on tape teaching the kids that I tell lies, you know. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, the whole thing is just insane.
Yeah,
you
go
know,
ahead, say so.
I got
okay,
license for
here. I'd like to say something that might help a lot of the people out in regards to DCF and children problems. And the whole thing is actually in a common court situation, you have to bring a claim against whoever's violating you by trespassing and taking your property away from you. I think that's the problem that we have with all these child cases is that we're in their statutory courts, and when you start referring to children as children, they look at them as a way to make money off from them like chattel.
They do.
When you take and refer any time in that court system to these children as children, you've lost because you've given that court all jurisdiction over this situation. And
well, that's absolutely
what I've found
true.
From
that's...
people that are winning their cases is what they're doing is they're bringing a claim stating that somebody trespassed against them and took their property away from them because they are your property. They're from your bloodstream, and when you take and go into that court system recognizing the children as property, that court now has to take and turn right up out of their court system and go away from that equity situation and look at you because they're there to protect you and protect your property.
Yeah, but someone forgot to tell them that. You see, you're absolutely right in the position if you're going to fight them in the court, but I wouldn't fight them in their court. I'd take them into our court, to my court, to
your
court.
Well, that's where you need,
and,
that's where you
and,
need to take and bring them.
Right. You got to go right. I wouldn't talk of the children as property, though. I would be talking about jurisdiction and violation of the sanctity of the family. That's what I'd be talking about. And,
well,
and I would take them directly into the federal court. I make everything a federal issue. As I said, you know, I make everything a federal case, you know. What are you going to do, make a federal case out of this? Yeah, I'm going to. Every single thing. You can make a traffic ticket a federal case because once they violated your unalienable rights, then now it became a federal case. And
well,
they're doing it constantly.
I think the whole importance of a common law situation, in my opinion, is you need to establish that you are the prosecutor, number one, when you bring that claim against somebody. You're bringing a claim against somebody. And there's two ways that you could bring claims against somebody in a common court. And the biggest one that works for the end-all of everything is they're trespassing upon you.
That's right.
Now, with that trespass,
Now you can actually say, I not only believe that they trespassed against me, you can bring up their statutory. Well, you know, Title 18, 241 this, Constitution this, and start naming and say, they also believe that you violated and trespassed against me. And I think that's the way to go to always try to maintain your court, your common law court. Because once the whole thing, and what I'm finding out in these statutory courts is everything is a play on words. And if you don't understand the words that they're using and the meanings that they have behind them, you're getting lost in the conversation because they can't hear you. You're not speaking
right.
their language.
Well, that's why Thornton teaches everyone constantly to object to everyone, everything. And because the whole process is out of order to begin with anyway. But yeah, look at whenever you're in their court talking, you gotta object to everything, and you gotta move back to jurisdiction, and you can't get lost in any conversation. Anything they bring up is irrelevant in that courtroom, because you're in the wrong court to begin with, and it's proven by the fact that you're there. Okay, unless the trial is going on and the jury has been picked and you're going forward, unless that happened already, you don't belong in the courtroom. That judge has no business trying to make any decisions on any of these things other than being the traffic court to move things along.
Well, exactly. He's just there to hear the case. And I think that's where we make
problem. He's not there. He's not there to hear the case. He is there to just be a traffic cop, to make things move along, make sure this side gets this point. Okay, you hang on. Let this people respond now to keep that thing going. The decision maker are the people in the box over there. And you should always have people in the box. And if the people ain't in the box, then you get to make the decision. That's what Thornton teaches, and he's correct in that. But that's a rare situation, to be honest with you. Once we get back to sanity, it'll be a rare situation.
Yeah.
So the judge does not get to decide anything. He doesn't get to decide the law. He doesn't get to decide the facts. He doesn't get to decide the penalty or the decision.
Well,
he doesn't get any of that.
But that's where you lay it out in your claim from the original claim that you're putting in. You're specifying the rules of your court. And I think a lot of times you have to take and remind that judge.
Yes.
You need to remind that judge, this is my case. And when you start repeating to the judge, this is my case.
Well, yeah, first of all, you got to call it an action, though, because you got to be careful with the word claim, because then that brings you back into the equity side. So it's always an action.
Well, that's where
I claim.
I guess I don't see eye to eye with you on that situation, because a claim is nothing more than a statement of an injury against you.
You could put it that way, but when you use an action at law, then it's clear that it's common law. It's just a common law word to use. And again, you're right. You can use that word if you didn't have to worry about them, you know, constantly hijacking you back into the other side. But the key thing is this. Yeah, the key thing is this, is you don't let that judge get away with anything. He can't make the decisions that he's making. He can't hear the things that this other side is requiring, you know, trying to pull the court to. You know, they're moving the court to be thrown out for no standing or move or no cause of action or all this other baloney. Look at the fact that you have an affidavit, you got standing and you got cause of action in any common law court. And so the key thing is the judge gets one chance, and people have to realize this. If you're going to be serious about a court case, the judge gets one chance to do the right thing. As soon as he makes a decision and goes the wrong way, you got to do a writ of error, and you got to overturn it. And maybe he gets another chance after that, because as long as the writ of error and he allows you to overturn it and he goes forward, that's good. When he tries to get to push back, now you have to add him as a defendant, and you need another judge there.
And can you also take on the same aspect of a writ of error, go with a vacate order? For no subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, it depends. First of all, it should be your case. If you moved it into federal court, it's your case, violating your unalienable rights. So you don't want it to vacate. But no, you can't. If there's an affidavit on one side, the other side can't move for a vacating. And obviously, if you did the affidavit and you're moving forward for damages, you don't want to get a vacated anyway.
Right, that's true. That's true. But I think the importance of what I'm
trying to say. Someone's enjoying cereal or something in the background here. Just thought I'd share that, but go ahead.
I think the important thing of what I'm trying to, to put out to these people is when you start referring to those children as children, to them, they're nothing more than chattel, and that brings them, that brings you into their equity court. And when you use property, that just takes and throws them right off the loop, and that court has to protect
you and your property. I think that's going the wrong direction. If you're arguing those things, you're in the wrong court. You shouldn't even be arguing those things. You need to, if you feel that you have to argue, look, it's very simple. You walk into a court, and they call conferences, okay? They call it a conference. That's not a common law court. Objection from everything from beginning to end. You don't belong there. We don't belong here. This is not a common law court. I open a court of record. And so everything they're doing, now you challenge what the judge is doing, that the judge is in a conspiracy with the lawyers in that court in order to hijack you into a foreign court. And you got to make it known. You got to get it on paper. You got to let the judge know, look, you guys are moving me back into the wrong court. This is not my court. And we're not going to go through this over and over again. You know, I opened up a court of record.
In a common law court, too, isn't it the understanding that in a common law court, you're not dealing with any corporate fiction at all? You're dealing with people on people. So the important thing
that's
to
why
do
you don't belong
is,
inside
is,
of a courtroom.
Well, and that's how you're going to take and hold your common court is when you bring your claim against somebody, you're going to be bringing against individuals, okay? And when you bring up the idea of that being your property, you get them up on the stand or whatever to get them to testify, is that your property? And if that's your property, can you prove that that's your property?
Well,
I can prove it's my property.
If you're talking about children, I wouldn't talk to them about property, but I would talk about them from the fact that they were given to you by God and that they are, you know, your DNA to begin with. They're your children. Nothing can come between you and your children. Nothing. No, not really. You know, I wouldn't see it as property. I hear what you're saying. I'll have to look for.
The only reason I say that, John, is to simplify it for the court to
understand
where their standing is.
If you gotta explain to the court that they're your property, then you're in the wrong court. Okay, that's my point. And you're always in the wrong court. Remember that. You're always in the wrong court. They stop calling their stupid hearings and your papers go back and forth, which really at the beginning it says, look, you write all your papers. You put it all up front. You leave nothing out. When you're done, when you file your papers, there should be nothing else left to file. The other side comes back and they file all their papers, and when they're done, there's nothing else to talk about. Now it's time to just set a date, unless we can settle. Let's set a date, go forward, get a jury, and let's make the decision-making. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Anything in between those things is not according to the common law. So you don't want to deal with it. You don't belong there. I object to everything. I write a writ of error, and you get out of there. If he made any decisions, you undo them. You rescind every decision he made, and you move on.
Hey, John, Kelly here. I want to put my hand up.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, this is Kelly Mordecai. We talked on Monday. I've got some exciting stuff to talk about. I have discoveries. I can't wait to get them to you. All right. But first I have to tell you a couple attorney jokes, if you will. You know, I studied case law, I studied a lot of history, the intent, arguably the idea of the grand jury came from Deuteronomy 16, 17, and 19. The Sanhedrin was an exhibition of that, if you will, through tradition. Anyway, so I studied all this stuff, and people are sometimes like, are you an attorney? And I say, no, I'm honest.
yeah.
And then I went through a divorce, you know, client didn't pay $12,000 and wife left, but I had a good attorney, if there is such a thing. Yes, he was a really good guy. He's helped over a dozen couples reconcile during divorce. And so I got to know him and I tease him and stuff, and I says, you know, the problem with attorneys, it's the 90% that make the 10% look bad. Mm-hmm. And he laughed and he goes, no, it's the 99% that make the 1% look bad. so anyway, so I've had some really good discoveries, like I mentioned on Monday, and you invited me here, so I'm glad to be here. I've been invited by a private person to appear before a federal grand jury regarding prosecutorial misconduct. It is ridiculous. I don't want to go on a long story of the federal USA or United States attorney and the FDA. It's unbelievable. Anyway, the guy's facing 37 years, okay? And so he's asked me, you know, because I wrote a book, and he's asked me to appear. Well, the question is how we're going to get before the grand jury. We got some tricks in this document I want to send to you. But I have found something stunning. You know, there's an indictment where, according to Blacks and even Blackstone, you know, the great commentator on the British laws in the 1760s, Blackstone was mentioning, you know, an indictment is when the government brings a matter before the jury, and a presentment is when the grand jury finds out on its own and investigates on their own. Now, first the problem, then we'll get into the solution. And presentment has a phenomenal amount of solution. And I'm going to read you a charge by a few judges. This is stunning. This is so exciting. All right, so Federal Criminal Procedure Rule 7, you know, the attorney must sign the indictment. Oh, really? Where did the grand jury independence go? I mean, it kind of went out the window. The USA must sign it. Yes, sir. U.S. versus Cox. U.S. versus Cox. Yep. In Mississippi, the appellate court ruled. What was that?
I said, can you slow down a little bit? You're talking fast.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just so excited. Okay. So, here's the bottom line. Somebody is really corrupt in the executive branch and gets before the grand jury, the United States attorney from the Justice Department can say, you know what, we're not going to sign it. What? Yeah, and since we don't sign it, it's an invalid indictment.
Well, yeah, that's in the corporate arena, but not in common law. If we indicted the governor, he gets indicted.
All right, so here's what I've discovered, okay? There was a good judge. His name was E. Harold Cox in Mississippi. There was a perjury matter before the grand jury. Not a case, it's a matter. And the grand jury says, okay, this is 1965. Okay, great. Let's indict him. Okay. So the USA says, okay, but first I got to call Washington, D.C. to the Justice Department. He comes back in the grand jury room and says, the Justice Department has told me, do not prepare the indictment and do not sign the indictment. Like, what? So the foreman wrote to Judge Cox. Judge Cox said to the USA, you get in here right now. What is going on? Well, Justice Department told me not to prepare the indictment, not to sign the indictment. The judge says, you got a half an hour to change your mind. Come back in my court in 1/2 hour. And so he comes back a half hour later, and he said, you know, I talked to the active attorney general. His name is really hard to pronounce, and the attorney general has told me, do not prepare it, do not sign it. The judge said, all right, contempt of court. U.S. Marshal arrests this man and put him in the county jail until he changes his mind. And then they fought it, and the case is U.S. versus Cox, 1965, and so the appellate court ruled against the judge and said, without a USA's signature, the indictment is invalid. And that only applies in the Fifth District. It's advisory elsewhere. And so attorneys are relying on...
Yeah, look at all of that. Any of the state appellate court stuff, you know, it's all questionable. It's all governed. Everything is governed by the United States Supreme Court. Now, it is true that the state courts get to make their decisions and do their appellate stuff. But whenever it isn't contrary to the United States, to the decisions of the United States Supreme Court, ultimately the Constitution itself, it's null and void and irrelevant. And obviously that's null and void and irrelevant.
Well, here's what an attorney wrote, which I think he's a good attorney. Montgomery Sibley. I wanted to say Montgomery Gentry, but that's a country western band. All right, so Montgomery Sibley wrote that essentially, through what has happened now, we have a coup d'etat by the executive branch by not letting people get before the grand jury and the games and other things. Well, I started looking up presentment, okay, and I wrote this document. I'm trying to get it to you. I looked up presentment, And I am finding several presentments by, or I'm sorry, charges to grand juries. John Jay, he basically said, you will investigate offenses against the laws of the United States, and you will present them. And here is another one I found. It's by Judge William Goforth in 1795. And this is a heavy, heavy charge to the grand jury regarding presentment. And this is the quote. As this is a point of law in which the rights of men are deeply interested, I shall detain you 1 minute longer. Suppose in this territory we are honored with a visit from our illustrious and well-beloved president, which of course was George Washington, who is known to have a soul elevated above all that is mean. Nevertheless, as he is human and it is the lot of humanity to err, suppose he should fall beneath himself as to strike, beat, wound, and commit a violent battery on the body of a poor citizen. While you are sitting and within your knowledge, would it not be your duty to make a presentment? Certainly it would. If you did not, he might pity you as men, but as cowards, he would despise you. And I found others, 1864, another.
Well, I agree with that. They have duty. They have duty. But what that judge did to that guy was wrong, because he should have understood the intimidation, and he should have explained it to the guy a lot better and pressed him forward to do the right thing. The turning over by the appellate court was that again is another problem. The whole system really is just rot. Now, on top of that whole thing, at that point, they were all a corporate system anyway, so the whole thing was defunct. You know, this corporate system's been around as long as most of us have been alive.
I know. I've been looking on your website how to upload something, or maybe I had to call my county coordinator and get
this to you. Yeah, we don't have anything set up at the moment, only because we don't have enough funding in to really get to that point where we're going to set it up where people can do some uploading, but then we're thinking, we'll limit it. But we've grown so big, we've got a lot of people, and people will be uploading so much stuff, it'll overload us so much, and the cost factors will become too heavy. So,
okay.
But if it's important, I'll look to upload it. What do you got?
Well, it's a document I call Independent Counsel/Presentment. Because they haven't nixed presentment. All they can say about presentment is it's obsolete. And Leo D'Onofrio pointed that out in his thesis, if you will, on the fourth branch. Obsolete? No, it's not obsolete. They just don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so there's some stunning stuff I have discovered. And, you know, this is like, I almost want to say, you know, well, Thomas Jefferson, the cause of liberty is eternal vigilance. And but I have discovered some really good things here, and I had your email somewhere. I just got to dig it up. But hopefully it will circulate around to you, and I think you're going to really like this, is presentment. And then I provide ways to get this to a grand jury pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 1504. And I know there's this common law thing.
18 U.S.C. 1504?
Yes, but there's a trick. When you read it, the first two paragraphs will scare the bejeebies out of you. But it's the last sentence. Nothing in this section shall prohibit a communication to appear before the grand jury. In other words, they scare the heck out of you to try to talk to a grand jury. Oh, it's jury tampering. But then the last sentence is, well, if you want to put in a request to appear, there's no penalty.
I'm going to have to look at that and see I can see. So.
Yeah, but notice that they will try to scare you in the first two paragraphs, and the last sentence is the key. And so what we're going to try to do to help my friend on the prosecutorial misconduct, our first step is to the U.S. Department of Justice. You have to go through the gatekeepers. Okay, so they're going to say no. Okay, fine. We knew that. We expected that. We go to the judge, 18 U.S.C. 3232. The judge won't present it.
Then we're looking
1504. Oh, no, that's 28. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, 18 U.S.C. 1504. So first attempt, USA, Justice Department, they are going to deny it, of course. Expect that. We go to the judge, 18 U.S.C. 3332, say, hey, look, the USA refused. Could you please allow me to appear? If the judge refuses, we go to the third step. We're looking at putting a full-page ad in the local paper, and then the grand jury can issue their own subpoena. And, of course, if we're lucky enough to get in there, the U.S. I have a sealed envelope, which Matthew Faulkner talked about doing. I have a sealed envelope. And, of course, the USA is going to say,
Well, let me read 1504, see if I can appreciate it. Whoever attempts to influence the action or decision of any grand or petit jury of any court of the United States upon any issue or matter pending before such jurors or before the jury of which he is a member or pertaining to his duties by writing or sending him any written communications in relationship to such issues or matters, and remember, it's the attempt to influence the action, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 6 months or both. Now, nothing in this section shall be construed to forbid the communications of a request to appear before the grand jury. Now, here's the key thing. You see, appearing, to try to influence the grand jury, especially in writing, and that's the key. I don't think they want anything done in writing to begin with. But also, the influencing is not necessarily bearing witness. Now, to appear before the grand jury, again, you better not be trying to influence them, but to be the witness of whatever it is that you can, you know, be witness of and give to that grand jury. So that is the key. The problem is they won't allow anyone to come see the grand jury. And, of course, the grand jury is a corporate grand jury anyway. They're statutory.
Except they operate by their conscience, by you and me. Or you and I have a conscience. They operate by the conscience.
Yeah, but they do a very good job filtering these people out. I've seen the paperwork. I wouldn't answer any of those things. I just wouldn't respond to it, and I can't. And my conscience won't let me respond to that. So they'll never choose me as a jurist. And,
well, of course they won't choose you.
But they really filter people out. They look into your psyche. They figure out who they want. They want people who they believe that they can sway and will believe everything that the judge and the prosecutor says. That's what they want.
Well, I agree that the whole system has been, and Attorney Sibley just pointed it out, it's a coup d'etat. Because if there is no grand jury indictment, Fifth Amendment, they are protected. So if you control the grand jury, your buddies on the executive branch can get away with murder. No indictment, no account. Ted Kennedy got away with murder at Chappaquiddick because no indictment.
Well, we're not going to get into those things, though. But I hear what you're saying. You are right. They can get away with murder. Look at, we're hearing stories of people on the grand jury. We heard about that tonight. Roger had called in. Looks like he's still on the line with us. But he's called in about a problem going on the grand jury and the influence by the prosecutor and the judge and everybody trying to stifle this because he's discovering some other problems. And they don't want this to go any further than what it is because they're going to have a runaway jury. They won't allow for a runaway jury. So
well,
they're
Roger,
squashing it.
Yeah, if Roger is still on, like in California and the federal, if you call deliberation, the judge and the prosecutor or USA has to get out of the room. When you're in deliberation, oh, we're going to talk about a subpoena. You got to get out of the room. We're going to deliberate whether to issue the subpoena. Leave.
Well, yeah, that they're supposed to. As a matter of fact, I believe there's actually code that tells them that, but they don't care. They don't follow
the
rules.
Yeah, our guy wouldn't get out of the room.
Yeah, they don't care.
They violated the law, then, if that is your state statute.
We have a situation where this guy had information he wanted to get to the grand jury, and they refused to let him have access. He tried every which way to get to it, and then finally they started to assault him. Now he's facing, I don't know how many years, 20 years in jail. He's going up for sentencing next month.
Walter.
Yeah, Walter.
Well,
Yeah, I mean, you can. I think we've had some chats on Facebook, you know, Kelly Z. Mordecai. But, yeah, I'll try to somehow, because I got a county coordinator from your website and others, and I can probably get a hold of them and send the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, send me the PDF, and I'll see if I can get it up there. You know, let me look at it. I'll share it with other people and get their thoughts. And I don't know if they have time. How many pages is it?
How many what?
How many pages is the PDF?
The text is about, I think, 20, and then with attachments, I get up. I can't remember. I just finished it today.
What exactly is this? What is this paperwork?
It's called Independent Counsel / Presentment. And I think presentment
is
a really
good
way to go.
Yeah, what I'll do is send it to me, and I'll try to get it to Gerard. And then he can maybe go through it, and then he could discuss it with me, and then we'll see if we can put it up online. If I get time to read it, I'll try to read it. I'm so focused in on so much work, and also I have to continue. Like I'm working diligently, whatever time I can get, into the Federalist Papers, because I believe it's extremely important that I understand all these different positions our founding fathers had, and all the debaters of the Constitution. Because it's going to be helpful for interpreting the Constitution. Because who's better off to interpret the Constitution than the framers of it, you know?
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
So a strong position on what we're doing.
Well, here's another exciting piece that I found out. Somebody has put together the grand jury charges of the 1700s, late 1700s, all the way through the 1800s. And it's a two-volume book. It cost 300 books, but they transcribed all this handwriting of the charges, and it's just stunning. And I will bet you that you'll find 500 presentments and maybe 50 indictments, because the Justice mm-hmm. Department didn't exist until 1870.
There you
this
go.
This is fundamental.
Right. Well, but, yeah, because look, they had nothing to say, because ultimately, you know, they were involved in very heavy cases like murder and stuff, but they really didn't have much to say, because most of what the state brings up before the grand jury is not a crime, and that's the problem. You know, look at we discovered that we have over 90,000 courts in the United States. That's big business. 90 just breathe that in a little bit. 90,000 courts, okay, and that's pretty heavy. You know, we discovered we have, we have 90 district courts on the federal level, but it turns out that there's a heck of a lot more courts than that, because they have other courts that are not called district courts, but they're part of the district, they're within the district. And I was unaware of that until recently. I mean, in New York, I mean, we've got, goodness, I'm not sure, 20, 25 federal courts. What do we need all those courts for? And they're manned by judges, not one, but many. And you got to say, what do we need all these courts for? What's going on? I mean, a lot of it is, I think, IRS stuff. But, you know, it's just insane.
Well, what's your email, if I may ask?
John@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Well,
John, for the sake of argument, they're making $1,000 a day profit from all of the operations over their costs.
Uh-huh.
That's $90 million a day.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a big business. We're in the wrong business.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Well, I think we're in the right business.
I do too.
I'll send you the heading, John, of Independent Counsel / Presentment.
Okay.
And then it'll be a PDF, and you can pass it to whoever.
Could you send it also to rbd7804@gmail.com?
Okay, let me try that again. rbd7804@gmail.com.
Gmail.com. All right, let me move to another person now. We only got about 8 minutes left. I'm going to shut down at midnight, so if anybody has 8 minutes worth
John?
Of something.
Yeah, John,
yes.
This is Gary.
My name is
I listened John. To your call last night with Rod Class, and you made a comment on there how you had released a lien on your property. You know,
right.
I was wondering if you could steer me to something on the website, or if you know.
Well, yeah, I don't think I have anything very specific. I might have something up there on the IRS. I don't remember, but, you know, I try to be careful with that. But it's a very simple thing. One of the main things is they need what's called a Form 56 or Form 4490. One of them is a notice of claim, and the other one is a fiduciary authority. And what they do is they're ceasing your property in rem without those two pieces of paper. And the federal government is acting in rem, ultimately under admiralty. But in order for them to act in rem, they have to file the paperwork in the federal court. The dirty trick is, or the dirty secret is that they never do. In order to file those two papers, they have to get someone to swear that there is a claim, a valid claim, and they got to verify it, swear. They also have to swear that they have fiduciary authority over your estate, and you'll never get that. Once you understand that, then you'll understand what the notice of lien is. The notice of lien is really telling you that a claim, that there's already a filing in the federal court in your district. So all you got to do, it's not going to be there. Go down to the federal court and have them search for those claims, the 4490 and the Form 56 or anything on your name, and it'll come up blank with absolutely nothing. I've heard of one case where the person asked that they would then take that and could they write a paper and make that point that it doesn't exist, and they did do that. And they put a stamp on it, you know, and so on and so forth, right from the federal court. But in most cases, they won't. But that's okay. Enough of the knowledge and the clerk's name for an affidavit to put it down and then go into the court and let them know, I've seen no 4490, I've seen no Form 56. There is no fiduciary authority. There is no proof of claim. What are we doing here? See, now they're committing a crime, and they know it. The federal judge doesn't want this in the court. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Jurisdiction plays a high place in it also, and numerous other things. You know, and if you're going to sue, you sue everybody. If you're suing in an IRS case, you sue the sheriff. That stops him. You sue your banks. It stops them. You sue the clerk. It stops them. You sue the agents. It stops them. And then you go into federal court, and then you start to lay the dirt out. So it doesn't get any more difficult.
Okay. I did sue about 12 agents. I used an administrative remedy.
Well, let me tell you something. What you're going to want to do at some point, if you're suing them because they're coming out after you, and they're willing to back off you and leave you alone, I wouldn't go back and poke a stick back in it into them, because they could be very dangerous, and you better know what you're doing. Anybody that they got their clutches, and you just want to get away from them. I'm good with getting away from them. I went after them for the amount of money they came after me. I thought that was a righteous thing to do. They came out after me for $127,000. Well, they put $127,000 of grief on my life, and that's what I want. Now, when my case was, when all this other stuff happened, I didn't push anymore. I let it go. I got other battles to fight. So I didn't go in after my money or what I was really wanted to get out of this thing. I didn't go in for that. But I got them off my back, and they left me alone.
Okay.
So think about what you're doing, if it's worthwhile going in, because, you know, once you stick that stick back in the hornet's nest, you don't know what's going to come out.
Well, what I've done is I filed administrative remedy.
You're not going to get anywhere with that.
No, and I followed up with three letters total, and no response, of course. All certified.
Yeah, you're not
going to
get anywhere.
Right, okay, and that's fine. I would like to get the lien released, though, so...
Well, I just told you how to do it.
Yeah, do you know anyone that does that kind of stuff?
No, you got to learn it yourself. There's
okay.
No one going to do this for you. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, there may be some people out there that are lawyers, per se, not bar lawyers, but they're private lawyers, and they... It may help you, I guess, but look at, you don't know whether they know what they're doing or not, and you look at, you have to, people, there are three things people have to deal with themselves. You got to deal with your God first and foremost. You don't need a spiritual advisor. You need God. You go to God on your own. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is, you have to get control of your political, life. I mean, the sense is don't. I join a party only for the purpose of becoming a committee man. But other than that, I would not even have been listed as one of the parties. But the bottom line is don't trust in those people. you figure it out for yourself, even though the elections in most cases are rigged, at least the big elections. And the third thing, you got to have control of your judicial life. I mean, look at any of your legal matters, you need to be able to handle them yourself. And all of these things we could teach our children, and we could do it in the first 8 years of school, and there's no reason for children to go beyond 8 years in school. And if you look in Kansas, the Kansas test for an eighth grader at the end of the year, at the end of the term, they're coming out of school, this is the final, and the test in 1890, was it 1890? Let me think. Yeah, it was an 1890 Kansas school test, eighth grade, and it was more superior than the college level, as we know it. And they did know who George Washington was, and they did know who fought the Revolutionary War. You know, they actually knew those answers to those questions, where the children today don't even know that. So what do we even bother sending to school? They take them for 12 years so that they can, you know, brainwash them a little longer, and those who continue into college, then they'll brainwash them even more, you know. But we need to teach our children to handle it themselves. You can handle all your things yourself, and you need to do that. That's, you know, with National Liberty Alliance, we cover all three bases. We do have Bible studies on Saturdays, 7 p.m. right here in this room. We have so we help you with your spiritual life, but you have to connect with God. That's your job. It's in your prayer closet. We're trying to teach people and bring them around to the judicial life that they need to have. And so they need to know the common law and the Constitution and the founding fathers and history, American history, and how this thing came together, the history of the grand jury. We have, trial by jury by Lysander Spooner, okay? We have 5,000-year leap, which really tells the people what our founding fathers' beliefs were and how this whole nation got started. And we also have the political side, which we haven't talked much about, but we'll get back to that at a later time. But we do have a political tab where we teach people and talk to people about becoming a committee man, which is a very important part of what people need to be doing. So these are the important things in life. These are the things worthwhile studying and thinking about and working out. So don't get yourself a lawyer. Don't get yourself a priest. And don't go get connected with a party. You take care of all that business yourself. Now, to grow in that, if you can find teachers that are really going to teach you the truth, you know, that's the hard part to find. I submit that you find that here at National Liberty Alliance.
Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, okay. John. I have a question for you, John.
As long as it's quick.
It is very quick. I've been waiting patiently to chime in all night,
Yeah,
I'm going to email you a couple of questions, if that's all right, to maybe help get some insight on the proper forms to do, because I'm getting railroaded in court, and I'll leave it at that. That way I'm not.
Well, why don't you bring it in next? Can you wait off until Thursday?
When my court date is, next Thursday.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit. I'll see what I can do. I'm not good at answering emails because it makes me have to sit and write, and then I have to think and get into
it. I understand that.
And, you know,
okay.
it takes a lot of time.
I need to know the proper way to get rid of my court-appointed counsel.
You're fired.
Well, I said that, and I went down to where the judge sent
me to get one. Go file an order of protection. Do an affidavit of stalking. Bring a 50-foot tape with you after you get it in the court. Have them arrested.
What state are you in?
Affidavit, Texas. Affidavit of what?
You have to do an affidavit for stalking. First of all, before you do that, you have to tell the people, leave you alone. Go away. I don't want to be bothered by you. Now, remember, you're going to run into problems with the judge on this, and he's going to want to do a psychological evaluation on you, and you got to be real careful of that and understand what's going on and how to defend yourself from that. That's a whole other thing. But ultimately, you don't have to have that counsel. You bring your own counsel. Here's your problem. What kind of case is this?
They're trying to charge him with felony, and I don't see how me having somebody else's property when I bought it from a third person and had a receipt for it, that I'm being charged with burglary. Mm-hmm. Well, they're saying
well, if you
that,
bought it, but, if you bought it from someone else and you got a receipt, then they should be able to trace it back to that person.
Well, this is what the court-appointed attorney told me. Well, they can't find the person, so it falls on you.
No.
Well, and you know, that's look at you have to do an affidavit.
Day one,
get into court.
They've been trying to put me in prison for a year.
Well,
hey,
you
John?
Have to do an affidavit. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, John. Nick, Kelly here again. I recently had a real estate blunder. Some guy was taken for $60,000. I'm a civil engineer, and I do real estate. And I might be able to answer the question.
Go ahead.
Or at least help
you
want to
do
guy.
It here, or you guys want to connect?
Well, it's real simple. Is there a deed recorded in the county recorder?
Is there what?
No, what kind of property was it? He's thinking of
it was tools.
It was tools. Yeah,
tools.
Property.
It was tools. Okay. So it's
yeah,
a he
so
said,
it's
she said.
Story.
So they have to come up with some type of evidence that you stole it. It's a he said, she said. If you have a decent public defender, right? You have a decent public defender. Freudian slip there, public defender. All right. If you have a decent public defender, he should be able to say, Your Honor, this is a hearsay, and take the evidence you have, and you should be pretty solid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
look, here's the bottom line on this case, in my opinion. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and this would be in a court of law, of course. If you have a document that claims that you a receipt that you bought this off somebody. And they can't prove that you made that or someone was forged. If they can't prove that, then they have to accept that because it is what it is. And then all you have to
mm-hmm.
do is marry that with an affidavit. Now,
okay.
Your affidavit with that should be sufficient. Now, your lawyer hasn't told you that because they're not taught to do affidavits. They don't do affidavits ever. They don't want affidavits in the court at all. They've been operating for years without affidavits. And, but in any event, that's what I would do is do an affidavit and couple it with that as an attachment, you know, Exhibit A. And, and that's your case. Now prove something different. You got. Did you see anyone see me going and stealing this stuff? Is there any fingerprints or anything? What proof do you have that I stole it, other than the fact that I do have the material, but I also have a receipt? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the best I can tell you. Now, if you're going to fight this in a common law way, you got to bone up. You got to go study, and you're not.
Okay.
1 week's time is not enough to study. So I think you're stuck at the mercy of dealing with whatever lawyers you got. Look at it. They're probably going to put this on. I mean, you're not going to trial on next week, are you?
No, it's my attorney set up for a plea date of guilty, and I've kept telling him that I'm not pleading guilty for this. And I don't think he represented me anyway to the fullest of his
capability.
Well,
let me ask you a question. Is there a prearrangement?
And I've asked for a motion of discovery and suppressed evidence, and
yeah,
I haven't received
okay,
either
well,
one
now
of them.
You're in, now you're back in their court if you're going to ask for
mm-hmm.
discovery and all that. Forget about that.
Well, I asked
you
my
got
attorney.
The evidence, you got your evidence. You set it up. They got what they
mm-hmm.
got. If they ain't got nothing, then they ain't got nothing. So, but
okay.
Here's the thing. Okay, here's the thing. Is there a prearrangement that is, you know, if you that they're just going to put you on probation or something, or
mm-hmm.
what's the deal? There must be a deal if he's going to plead. You try to plead you guilty.
Yeah, 1 year in prison.
Oh, tell him to go to hell. Yeah,
that's what
yeah,
I have.
Yeah, no,
told him.
You got to fire him. No, you can't allow that. You got to get in court and you got to tell the judge you have not pleaded anything. You have nothing to do with that. No. Now, but you better
okay.
start studying the common law. You should be able to buy yourself time, because
okay.
You know you can even say that I want a jury. That's what I want. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And play their game for a while. You could probably. How long have you been going through this?
6 months.
Okay, well, that's quite a bit of time, but I'm sure you can get another 6 months out of it. Two things are going to happen in the next 6 months. Either you're going to educate yourself and be able to deal with this.
Oh, I have been educating myself a lot, but I just don't think I'm
thing.
Reading the right documents.
Well, go up to our essays page and get onto the common law page. That's where you want to be. Okay. Yeah. But the other thing you want, you know, the other thing you got to realize is that we're very close to being where we got to be. And once we get in, then the whole world's going to change, so to speak. But, you know, if we don't get in quick enough, the country may fall before, the nation may fall before we get there. That's
that
the big fear. I don't really feel we're not. I believe we're going to get in. I think our getting in is very, very close. I really do. Very close. But if we don't do it in time, then we lose.
Yes,
so
sir.
There is
John,
emergency.
Listen, could you ask him how the original owners of the tools are proving that it's theirs in the first place?
You just did.
They
had a
serial number on the product.
And they have the proper original receipts and everything?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Well, that's the best you could do there, then. That's you know, you can argue it and tell the judge right out, no, I don't go along with any of this stuff. You know, just scream loud on that.
Kelly,
as a matter of fact, say, I don't want this guy. This guy is not representing me. I'm not guilty, and he's not representing me, so I don't want this guy. I want this guy to go away. Right now, you're going to have to deal with lawyers until you can get away from him. And you know
okay, can I throw some out here? Did you write the receipt or did he?
I wrote it. He signed it.
Okay. There's handwriting experts that can prove it's his signature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they don't know who the person is that signed it.
No, it doesn't matter. They can get some of his old documents, whatever. Maybe the county recorder has certain things that he's already signed. But if a handwriting expert shows that it's his signature, it's over. It might cost you $500, but
sure.
Yeah, but the person who sold it to him, they can't find him. Is that what you're saying?
It doesn't matter.
Sir.
The handwriting expert can look at his handwriting from older documents.
Oh, yeah, from him to say it's not his signature, right.
Well,
a
handwriting expert can say, I've looked at this, I'm an expert, this is his signature on the receipt.
Whose
signature?
My signature.
Right?
The seller's signature, yeah.
Yeah, the sellers, he can't, but they can't find it.
Yeah, but I'm the buyer. I'm not the seller. I can't find it.
You're the buyer, but the signer sold it, and he sold it.
Right.
You prepared the list. He signed it.
Yeah.
That is key right there. It'll cost you more money. The problem with public offenders, gosh darn it, I did it again. The problem with public defenders is they only have so much time for each case, and they're pushing the plea bargain baloney. I almost swore when I said that. So if you can find a handwriting expert, and he can compare older documents of his and validate that, yes,
yeah, but
okay,
he doesn't know. Look at the person. They can't find the person that sold it to him. That's the point.
It doesn't matter. What matters, well.
But whose signature are you going to compare? They're going to compare his signature and say that he didn't sign it. That they can do.
Right, but courts listen to experts. Here's another document of the seller. He signed it. And
the seller. But they can't find the seller.
Right. Well, when you get this in front of a jury, that is huge.
Well, yeah, that is not his handwriting. Yeah, I agree.
But,
they got to throw the case out at that point. They have no evidence. I'll tell you what, the key to this case is your affidavit.
Okay.
That's the key to your case. Affidavit of truth.
Affidavit of
okay,
truth.
With that, it's time to go. Yep, just an affidavit, just telling the truth. That's all. Okay, we're going to end it now. We'll be back Saturday at 7 p.m. for a Bible study, and, of course, Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, John, did you get the emails?
Which ones?
I sent you the emails earlier tonight about the case in Florida.
I haven't gotten them, but I haven't looked at my emails in a while. So what time did you send?
Just after we started this program, I talked with you, and sent them right on the line. And they're the bill of informations. And
right, hold on one second. Let me just kill the recording, and then we'll talk a minute. Let's see.